It's real simple. I want you to take a moment. And I want you to look each other in the eyes. I want you to put each other in your hearts forever. Because forever is about to happen here in just a few minutes.
Who do we have left? Britney Spears. Kim Kardashian. Paris Hilton. Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global.
I mean, the lines are blowing up.
Your name is Toby. I want to hear you say it. Your name is Toby.
You're with the brain. Have a time. That's right. Your point was powerful. This is a no-win situation.
Kirkland, and I'm on the air with Brian Hammer Jackson, and I do want to have his baby.
Good morning, everybody. Apparently, Kelly was messing with my opening theme.
No, I wasn't.
How did I get my name is Toby in my theme? Diane?
I have no idea.
I did it.
Oh.
In honor of Ruth.
Okay. Oh, I thought it was in honor of Pastor Jones.
I'll be right back.
I know. I haven't forgotten Pastor Jones saying that to me. Good morning, everybody. This is Brian Hammer Jackson Show. I'm with the MVP On Demand Network via BTR Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. We're global. They're listening to us all over the world. I got a letter from the soldier. Remember I told you guys about a soldier? Oh, you guys remember his letter. This was like 4 months ago. He wrote us a letter that he's in South Korea. He's listening to the show, and he had some kind of forgot. But anyway, we did a good show. He's listening today. Salute, hurrah. He's on our side. He's South Korea, everybody. So I'm going to go really quickly. We have some very special guests. I invited the most intellectual, powerful minds today to help us interview Dr. Mai Haley. And we're going to introduce those powerful minds. These people, I see Toy Moore here. These people are fantastic. They're intellectual. I can't say enough about them, and you're going to meet them all. They're powerful people. Everybody went through a struggle. They're overachievers. And in honor of Dr. Mai Haley, I had to bring in the best that influenced me. They're very intellectual. And so you'll meet them as they come in. I want to just say a quick hello to Kelly Corbin, who is my executive producer and worked so hard to get this segment off the ground, who has an ulcer right now, and warned me, no shenanigans. Okay, good morning, Kelly Corbin. I also want to introduce Diane Maris-Dillon. She will be answering the phones. She has strict orders today. Diane, what are your orders today?
Only allow people on that's on the guest list.
And those are your orders that you gave me. So it's not like I gave her the orders. She gave me the orders.
There's Diane, no monkey.
See? Well, you might have finished that. Go ahead. don't want to stop at no monkey. Go ahead, Diane.
I just said no monkey business.
There you go. Love you, Diane. Carrie Brooks, executive producer, professional lady. Hi, Carrie. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been warned
by
all of you.
Happy day in the neighborhood, huh?
It sure is. I've been warned by all of you, no shenanigans. One of the ladies I was talking about, she just left. Boy, we lost Toy Moore. Oh, no. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to introduce one of the guests today. We're going to do a round table. We have never done this before. I hope it works. So many intelligent people are coming on today as VIPs in honor of, as my guests, in honor of Dr. Mai Haley, one of the greatest ladies. Her name is Toy Moore. T-O-I, Toy Moore. And let's open up her mic. Good morning, Ms. Moore. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I got a little something on my throat. I'm not feeling so...
Okay, I hope you feel better. This is an important interview for you.
Oh, yeah, okay. Of course it is. I'm only kidding. It is an important interview. You know, I'm going to tell you, this interview is up to where I interviewed you. You are an important interview to me, too. Chamber of Commerce, a publisher, author in her own right, Ms. Toy Moore. I had to get up for an interview for you, too, so this is on the same level.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and inviting me to be a part of this. I'm very excited and very honored and looking forward to hearing all the information and what's going on with Dr. Haley and be included and asking her a few questions from the writer's point of view.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. And we're going to do something different, Ms. Moore. We're going to try to do a townhouse meeting kind of thing because, you know, we'll just go around because you have a lot of good questions. I'm sure she would love to answer. Hey, and then if we have time, you know me, I have to do my shenanigans. Come on, Ms. Moore.
Kelly, no, Toy.
No. I wouldn't be me. We're all going to play a game. All of us. In honor of us. Yes, you're going to play too, Carrie, in honor of Dr. Mai Haley. All right, everybody, I'm going to talk really quickly. We got a lot of things to get done here. People are coming in. And Miss Dr. Mai Haley will be in 10 minutes, so I got to talk really quickly. Usually when I start the show, there's usually, current events I'll talk about. I get invited. I don't know why. I get invited on a lot of talk shows. Most of it is, blog talk, and it's a big community of blog talk. I mean, blog talk has some really strong people on there, you know, Dennis Miller, so on and so forth. There's some big names. I accept sometimes, and when I do, it goes horribly wrong within 5 minutes. People attack me. They have a chat room where people want to burn me. And that's me just saying, hi, I'm Brian the Hammer Jackson. And right away, boo! I go, geez, it's like Jerry Springer. And then when I open my mouth on an opinion, they use me as an example of Satan. It happened 3 times. So I was invited to another show, and Kelly says, you're invited to another show. I mean, there's magazines, online magazines, written up our show. I want to thank you guys. And I said, Kelly, do you really want me to go on these shows again? They attack me. She goes, I better check them out this time. But here's one show that hurt my heart, really hurt my heart. There's a show I like to go on. I considered him a friend. I'm not going to mention the show. I happened to tune in yesterday, and he was upset. He was talking about a friend. He's not even a friend of his, but it's somebody by association, by Facebook, was killed. Now, the town he was killed in, I was raised in. I was raised in Ventura, California. My brother's a correctional officer in Ventura, California. My best friend is a sheriff in Ventura, California. So now he's talking about my town. So apparently this is the guy that guy got killed. He read a little excerpt about he was shot 5 times. He's angry. Angry. This is a person that I considered a friend. And it hurt my heart very badly. I am an advocate of free speech. There's no, I'm not hiding it. I said the danger of censoring a word, and we can go with it, and I have talked to Toy with this. We can go with the word nigger. I don't like the word. I think the word is disgusting. Do I think you have the right to say it? Yes. If we start censoring a word, let's censor a book. Let's censor art. Let's censor music. It is what it is. And if you get, and I said the danger of this is when you make that word so powerful, it's going to take a life on its own. It's going to change society. Just recently, last week, a black woman sued a black man for using the word nigger. She won a lot of money. And white people used to say, well, black people can say it. Why can't I say it? Because I think it's wrong for black people to say it. It's not either or. But do I think the word should be censored? No. You say what it is, but you got to take the responsibility of saying it. You have to take the responsibility. As far as censoring the word or making it an N-word or making it so more powerful what it is, it's wrong. With that in mind, being open-minded, I was listening to my friend's show. Apparently, somebody got shot, and he was associated with Facebook. Tragedy. And then he said, and them niggers. Toy, you can relate to this. It's different, and the pronunciation of a word can really take on a new meaning of the word. Am I correct here, Toy?
Yes, it very can, and depends on who's using it and how they're using it. It definitely can take on a whole different meaning.
Exactly. And I was thinking, okay. You know, I'm not going to call the man's show. It's a man's show. You know, he has the right to say what he wants to. He's angry. I'm listening. And then what really got me upset, he started using the word niggers and them niggas and them niggers, and then he mentioned something about Trayvon Martin. And this is where my heart just broke. He couldn't pronounce Trayvon Martin. So he said, Trayvon, Tray this, Tray that, who gives a F? And I'm going to be very gentle with my language in honor of our guests. Who gives an F and everything like this, and who cares about this? And this guy, remember, he's angry about a guy who he doesn't know, but he happens to be Italian, and he happens to be on Facebook, and he's furious. And he was, and then he's spitting out this, niggas this, and niggas this, and then they get a caller. Hurt my heart. This caller comes on, and they start talking about this and that, and then the caller goes, yeah, well, let's just give it to, if it was a nigger, you know, everybody will be up in arms. And I go, wow. And then, again, he skipped over, Trayvon, Tray this. I know you're listening. I'm going to educate you. You were upset about a guy you did not know because he was Italian. He was shot by the police officers. Then you started blaming the police officers. Oh, my God, those guys are crazy. Those cops are there. Those cops are out of the control. They're shooting everybody. I'd rather take the New Jersey cops. Yeah, you take your New Jersey cops who are on the take from the mafia. Right, good call. Anyway, what I'm going to say is you better remember the name Trayvon Martin, and you better remember it because you're upset at a guy who you did not know, your association from Facebook, he's Italian, and you're upset. Trayvon Martin represents every black kid, every black girl in the streets who are getting killed. When you see people march, it's because we're tired of seeing our children being picked up by the police abused, locked up, shot dead. He represents what's going on. He represents the black children of America, which we fight for, slain, laying dead in the street. Whether he's right or wrong, forget the jury. Florida law, fine. But this was a young man who was 17 years old, another black child dead. You better remember Trayvon Martin, because Trayvon Martin represents a lot of kids who are dying in Chicago right now. By the time this show is over, there's going to be 10 more kids, probably under the age of 5, shot down in the street. Their name should be Trayvon Martin, because they're all Trayvon Martins. And if you're not educated enough to understand the symbol of what's happening, then you're a moron. You hurt my heart. I considered you a friend. But hearing you say nigger 10 times on your show, I took you in. You're on my show. I wanted to do business with you. I thought you were a stand-up guy. But we find out who we are, the kind of character who we are, out of crisis. We can hide who we are when everything is calm, but out of crisis, your character comes out. You hurt my heart. You hurt my heart when you said, what about Jesse Jackson and everything? If he was black, the niggers will be protesting the street. Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, And then he said this, and somebody says, well, how come we don't do anything? Well, white people are too smart to protest. White people are too smart to protest? When Trayvon Martin died, for the very first time, I turned on the TV. They had people in Beverly Hills protesting. I have never seen it. They had people in Beverly Hills marching down Rodeo Drive with signs, justice for Trayvon, Beverly Hills. Yeah. And the marching of the protests, black people didn't march by themselves. There were white people in there. There were Jews. There were Catholics, Protestants. They were marching for equal rights, not for blacks. They were wanting equal rights for all. And we happened to be the one that were not getting any rights at all. So when you mispronounce Trayvon Martin and you don't know the symbol of what's happening with the kids dying today, you are the most ignorant moron. And you have a responsibility on the radio, because I know you got 90,000 listeners. You have a responsibility to get your story straight. And before you go after somebody because he's Italian, and then you call a guy that he was a boxer, and you call him he was fighting a gorilla, this is who you call my friend? Nah, you're not my friend. Sorry I had to get that out. I know he's listening. We're going to go on with the show. That got me upset. And guess who's here? Dr. Maya Haley. She's early, or am I late? Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce our guest today. Her name is Dr. Maya Haley. She's an author, she's a widow, and she's a widow of author Alex Haley. Kelly, are you talking to me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Somebody's buzzing me. Dr. Maya Haley.
Oh, no.
She's an author, keynote inspirational speaker, widow of the celebrated author Alex Haley. She's a contributor to Roots and author of the epic Civil War novel. Here's where she's going to get mad at me. Make sure you lock the door so she doesn't leave, because I'm going to mispronounce the name. The Treason of Mary
Louvester.
Louvester.
I practice all night. I am so honored. Here she goes. She grew up under her grandmother's watchful wise tutelage. My Lewis Haley spent her early childhood in the South Charleston, West Virginia, before her parents moved the family to Columbus, Ohio. Now, she was working on her doctorate. And at this time, Dr. Haley, what year are we talking about? Because this is phenomenal. I know that, are we talking about the 40s when you started working for your doctorate, when you're going to college?
Brian, are you insane?
Well, this is not going well.
1974.
Oh, right off the bat. Oh, that's not how I expected this. Can we edit that? Wow. Right off the bat. No, 1950?
1974.
Of course. How dare you, Kelly, putting that wrong information to me. Okay, even 1964, and you know what happened?
74.
Oh, sorry, 74. You're a young chick. But
I was a kid when I met Alex. Yeah,
huh?
I was a kid when I met him.
You? Oh, my God, you were just a baby then.
I was.
I assumed that, oh, so Alex had a trophy wife. Look at you.
I wouldn't call it that.
But talk to me, but you were growing up. You grew up in the South.
Well,
when
I
you
grew
first
up in
met,
West Virginia,
yeah, that was pretty bad too, though. But how old were you? I know the story, but how old were you when you met the author, Alex Haley?
I think I was about 22.
Uh-huh. 22. I know how you met him, too. Would you like to tell us how you met him?
Well, let's see. We had a two-part meeting. The first part was when he came to our campus, and I was about to defend my dissertation the next day, but I opted to go see Alex rather than prepare for that. And the second part was when he sent me a telegram and a ticket to come to Jamaica where he was living, and that's where we would eventually start working for Roots. In fact, not eventually, but immediately.
Now, this was after he did Malcolm X, am I correct?
Correct.
Now, did you read Malcolm X by Alex Haley at the time?
You know, not only did I read Malcolm X, but I was devoted to reading Malcolm X every year after I first read it. And not only that, the students that I counseled will come into my office with these dog-eared copies of the autobiography, and every single one of us was touched by the passage of where Malcolm started to reinvent himself, where he had been in solitary confinement. He asked the jailer for a dictionary, and he started with the word aardvark. And my students said, well, if Malcolm could get so low and reinvent himself, so can I.
Wow. Now, did you have your eyes set on, you're a young 20-something, Mr. Haley must have been in his late 30s, early 40s?
He was 50. He was in his mid-50s.
What the hell were you thinking, woman? I'm sorry, did I talk out loud? Okay. He's 50.
That's
50.
Right. He was almost 30 years older than me, Brian.
I mean, I know. Okay, so were you always looking for a daddy or something like that, you know, a daddy figure?
I was interested in meeting the icon of
Ooh.
My life. He was the writer who really got me to thinking about switching from academic writing into novel writing. And not only that, once he came to our campus and he spoke for 2.5 hours about the saga of his family, which really told the story about us all, I really wanted to work with this man. I felt my destiny was tied up with his. And I turned down a position at Harvard and a major position at Ohio State, and they could have paid me a lot, and I worked with Alex, who could have paid me nothing.
So you were a groupie.
No, I wasn't a groupie. I was a person who knew her destiny.
You did, and you're very smart. But would you consider him a mentor? See, if you married him, and I could hear the admiration. I could hear he was an icon to you. Am I correct? He was
correct.
Bigger than life. So if he was bigger than life, you're a 20-year-old. At this time, did you have a relationship? Did you have a boyfriend before? Were you involved with anybody at the time?
No, I was really involved in my own career and trying to determine who I was. And
right.
But I had really set my destiny. I knew where I was going. It was a matter of allowing myself to develop.
Okay, I like this. First date, where did Alex take you?
First date, you're asking the wrong questions.
I am? Well, let me go back to my book because I have other wrong questions. It just happened to be the other wrong question I'm going to ask
there was
you.
There was no first date, Ryan. When we got to, when I got to Montego Bay, where
mm-hmm.
Alex sent me a ticket to come and meet him, where he was hiding out from everybody who was mad at him. The publisher was mad at him because he had already missed every deadline.
Wow.
And they were behind. The producer had already bought airtime, and they were mad at him because he was not getting copied to them either. His ex-wives were mad at him, and he was hiding out. And so when I arrived, it was like in the 45 minutes it took us from Montego Bay to Negril, where his cottage was. You know, we talked about our grandmothers and our connections and our bonds, you know, in the South and all of that and our desire to write. And then by the time we got there, we went to work because that's what he needed.
Yeah. You were his muse.
No, I was nobody's muse. I was his helper. And I was an eager one at that. I was an eager one.
Yeah, well, you seem like you have a strong personality, but you had to kick his butt.
Well,
You had to kick his butt.
Well, you know, it was like because of the deadlines, and if he didn't make those deadlines, a lot was going to be lost. I set the pace for our work, and Alex had been knocking around for 12 years on the first third of Roots, which was really called Before This Anger. It was not called Roots. It was called Before This Anger. And he finished the middle passage before I arrived. So Kunta had just arrived in America when I arrived. And so it was the last two-thirds of the book. And 18 months later, I walked into Doubleday in the midst of a snowstorm in New York and delivered the copy.
Wow. Now, Roots, is it an autobiography of his family, tracing back to actual family, or were these characters of other people he have met during his travels?
No. It was the story of his family line. And what was so unique about Roots was that Alex was not only able to trace his family through the United States, but he was able to make that big jump from America back into Africa and locate his antecedent, his seventh generation back ancestor, and come across and tell the story of all of us by way of telling his family story.
You know what's interesting about Roots? When I was a little kid, when it came out, I think Roots affected, would you say this is fair? Because see, my father wanted us to get out of a bad neighborhood. So his bright idea, all right, kids, we're getting you out of a bad neighborhood because I don't want you to go into gangs. Where we're going, Pop? We're going to a white neighborhood. What? So now he moved us to a white neighborhood where there's no gangs, but we were like the only black family in school. So when Roots came out, I have had a lot of white people going, I didn't know that happened. What? I go, what? Oh, my God. And they used to talk to me about the episodes. I wanted him to whip that guy. I wanted Kuta to get off there and kick his butt. And these were white guys talking. Do you think it not only made an impact with the black community, but do you think it made more of a powerful impact of the young white community who weren't really familiar of slavery and how we got here?
I think it had an impact across the board because many of our own people did not know a lot about slavery. It really told the story in very picturesque ways of what happened to all of us, to our, to our antecedents who came over here, to our ancestors. And then what it also did was, for you and for many of us whose parents moved to the suburbs and whatnot, and we were the first, was that it gave us a language to talk with each other. It gave us a vocabulary to speak to each other, and it gave us some risk-taking. It said, I really want to know about you, so please pardon me if I'm awkward and my language is awkward, but I want to take the risk of knowing you. Would you mind? That's what it did. Together with the fact that it also spurred us into genealogy. If you remember, that was the time that genealogy became no longer the rich man's game. No longer the rich people looking for their family crest. All of us were out there looking for who we were and our connections.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that Jefferson started that genealogy?
Well, he had Andy.
You know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
At this point, I have a very I have a very important person. Her name is Toy Moore. She's a Chamber of Commerce. She's a president of the Black Chamber of Commerce. She's also a publisher. She's a strong lady, very intellectual. And Ms. Moore, would you like to ask a question to Dr. Haley, please?
Hi there, Dr. Haley. How are you?
Hi, how are you? I'm delighted to meet you.
Oh, I'm excited and honored to be able to have the opportunity to talk to you today, but I'm great and I'm glad that you are. So,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, I guess asking from a writer's standpoint, I was reading some of your story and it was just fascinating. And I know that it's based on a true story. So as a writer's standpoint, how did you make the characters so real and in your narrative and your dialect to make them talk? Because it felt like the reader was right there with you, holding on to every word on what you were saying. So, you know, I know it's a historical story, but you made it so real, like we were right there. How did you create that?
Well, from my work with Alex, one of the things he kept telling me over and over was, write to the senses. Make sure your reader can feel, touch, taste, be there with you, embrace them in every way, so that they know and can fully experience what the character is going through. Together with that was, I had to grow into Mary, and she reminded me of not only my grandmother back home, but the many strong women on Greenway Street. And, you know, once I connected with that aspect again, my rootedness on Greenway Street and with my grandmother, that was another one. And the third part was, when Alex died, I thought I was going to be able to take up the copy and just write it then. But the universe was not through with me then. By that point, every member of my family died of cancer. And so you don't go through that experience, but that you come out the other end a different, deeper, and more thoughtful individual. I had grown into Mary Lou Vester at that point. So when I sat down to write her, she had already congealed in the very DNA of who I was.
Okay. Yeah, I totally understand that. I understand, too, when you get into those characters so deeply, you become them, and it's hard to even get out of it. I know a few of my books are
exactly
characters, and it's hard to get out of them once you ingrace yourself into their characters.
Well, not only that, they take you over. And another thing Alex taught me was that when the story is right and when the characters are right, they will tell you what they want to say and do. And you become pretty much the channel for their speak. It's like everything of who you are as a writer and everything the characters are in your experience become one, and you simply write the copy in that respect. It becomes, particularly for female writers, it's very organic for us. We write from the seat of our power.
Right, very true. Yeah, well, you did a great job. I really love the story.
Thank you. So, did you like Cooley Park? She's one of my favorite characters. I mean, she's so outrageous and feisty. I never knew what Cooley was going to come up with next.
Well, and continue this. Check out.
And you know what? And you know what? It's like, you know, this is the first of six of the books. And I'm almost finished with the second book. And it's like the same thing. I don't know what Mary's going to do and what Cooley's going to do. They just simply, you know, I get up and I go to the computer and they just simply talk to me. You know, and that Cooley part is just so great. She is so outrageous. She just makes me laugh all day long.
I love it. And continue where I left off. And thank you, Toy. We're going to get right back to Toy because Toy is more interesting than I am. But I'm going to get back to more background here. Doc, you behave yourself, Dr. Haley. It says here, while working on your doctorate in communications and African-American studies at the Ohio State University, Mai was inspired by a speech delivered on campus by author Alex Haley. After achieving her goal of earning a PhD, she set out on her next goal to work with a renowned author. Impressed by Mai's drive and talent, Alex Haley gave her a major assignment to assist him in writing the remaining two-thirds of the book that was long overdue to his publisher within a matter of months. Together, they completed the work. At this point right now, I'm saying this because the drive that you must have, we know about this. I'm going to bring out the elephant in the room. First of all, you're a lady. And back in the day of the 70s, we know what was going on in the 70s. We still had the sexism. We still had the racism. We still have the glass ceiling. And have you written anything before you met Mr. Haley? Have you written anything at all?
Most of my work was academic, trying to get my PhD. But, you know, it's amazing. You never know where your blessings are going to come from. And when I finished the PhD program and I knew that I wanted to work with Alex, he had come to campus, he had riveted us all with his speech and his research and everything. I mean, he just ran circles around everybody who was academic, and he hadn't even darkened the door of a campus in forever. But, you know, I wanted to work with him, and when he left campus, we had not connected, and so I started sending out my resume, and I just wasn't getting anywhere. And it's just amazing how life connects you with the hooks and eyes of your own personal history, because, I fell into this depression because I knew that my destiny was tied up in this work and with Alex. And so, you know, I just kind of dissolved into this major angst. I was truly invested in being really depressed. And so I went to my mom's house, and I started working on this old rusted bike in the garage, and my mother was forever inviting somebody to Sunday dinner. And I was out in the garage this one Sunday, and this door opened, and this moon-faced man who was a priest stuck his head around the corner, and he said, "Hello." He said, you come into dinner. Well, the last thing I wanted to do was come into dinner. And so he's sitting there, and he's talking to me, and he's spearing the air with his fork, and he's in my direction, and he said, "You have an invitation. You must go." And I said, "No, I don't really want to go." He said, "You must go. Get up and call your advisor. Go." So I went upstairs, and I called my advisor, and he made the arrangements for me to go to the University of Colorado Boulder, where I was supposed to interview for chairman of African American Studies with some communications aspect. And so, you know, I went there, and the people were wonderful. The hall was packed. The people were very welcoming. And I started into my speech where I was telling all these lies about how I was going to be progressive if they hired me, you know, and this was just going to be wonderful. And I got halfway through, and I stopped. And I said, "Listen, let me tell you the truth." And I started talking about why I wanted to work with Alex Haley. By the time I finished my speech and I was skulking out of the room because I had given them every reason not to hire me, there was this very pleasant-faced black woman, and she said, can we talk? And the last thing I wanted to do was talk. I just wanted to get on the plane and take my embarrassment home. And she said, but I know Alex Haley. And I practically took her arm out of joint. We went out, and we sat in the hall, and she said, I promise you, I will get your resume to him. And the reason you have not connected is probably because he goes out on freighters while he's working, while he's writing the copy of the book. Had I not listened to that little priest, you know, I don't know what would have happened. But when I went back to Columbus, I had met the priest, he was not only gone, but when I contacted the church where he was supposedly visiting, they didn't know who he was.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow. That's kind of eerie there.
Don't you know? But that kind of stuff has happened all my life, and it was like he came into my life to further confirm what I was supposed to be doing and also to help me to the next leg of my journey to connect with Alex. Had I not gone to the University of Colorado Boulder and met Miss Harriet Morrison, who connected me with Alex, you know, I might have missed an opportunity. But you never know where your blessings are going to come from. That's why there's a very important aspect about being a writer, and that aspect is called surrender. You open up to the universe, not only in your writing, but in your belief, in practicing, working your faith, and you just go with it. You go with it, and you become who you are.
Divine intervention there.
It's not only that. It's your opening. It's your blossoming.
Yeah.
You set that in motion years ago, you know, so you set it up, and now that's your payoff.
Some people will call it karma. Some people will call it faith. Would you agree?
It's like in writing. You seed the copy, and then you pay off later. You seed and you pay off. You seed and you pay off. That's just the way the universe works.
That is pretty good. We have another gentleman here. His name is Xavier Paul. He is a professional actor. He also teaches speech. He's a voiceover expert. You've probably heard him in every commercial around. I usually don't see him until there's important guests come on. Ladies and gentlemen, Xavier Paul. Xavier, would you like to ask Dr. Haley a question?
Absolutely.
Hello. Hi. I'm glad to meet you.
Pleasure. Thank you so very much for making yourself available for this. And I can say that out of all, I sort of grew up as an actor and a voiceover artist, and I can say out of all the work that I've done as a voiceover artist, I find narrating audiobooks to be the most rewarding. And I really wanted to congratulate you on the award that that Roots won in 2008 for audiobooks.
Well, thank you very much, and you know, it's such a pleasure to meet you because, you know, I look for a voice like yours in trying to promote the audiobook for Mary Levester. I just can't imagine a richer voice than your own in order to convey.
Well, thank you.
What,
I'm just chopped over here. Never mind me. I'm going in a corner.
Yeah. by the way,
thank you.
But by the way, isn't Brian just absolutely awful? I mean, you know, first he mispronounces your name. Mispronounces your name. Then he calls you a groupie. I mean, he sure does get his... He puts himself
he's
persona
so delightful.
Non grata.
He's a keeper. You know, we keep him.
Oh, thank you.
He really is. He's good for the before and after. He'll be before, and we'll work on him, and we'll come up with him. So, really, I've always...
And this is my friend.
This is mine. I'm going to write a book.
Another word for him is called touchstone. You know,
the touchstone.
He's a catalyst.
with a follow-up version, the disinvited. But I really enjoyed. I should all jokes aside, Brian is a fantastic platform for the word to get out about what you do and the story of Roots. More relevant today, as history continues, the stories that you've written and write are more and more relevant. This is what's so amazing to me as an artist. As I move forward, I realize that everything that I've learned starting out continues to tell itself over and over again.
It doesn't. You're right. It does. It continues to evolve.
You know, I remember watching that first scene in The Butler where the little boy's father gets shot and he witnesses it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in the wake of the Trayvon Martin, I mean, I can't tell you how incredibly relevant. And here we are watching history repeat itself in its many variations. So I guess maybe in the brief time I have here, when it comes to people to narrate your stories, what are the things that you look for in whether they be actors or audiobook narrators? Because I teach a school and I have a wide variety of Afro-American and Latino voice artists, and we look to individuals like you to tell your great stories with our voices.
Well, I thank you so much, you know, for saying that. If I can repeat what I thought was your question, you're asking me what I look for?
Yeah.
I look
What's
for
important to you?
What the universe is directing us to do. I mean, if we're supposed to come together, we do. We have a purpose in what we do. If that purpose didn't start just today, you know, we're simply living it out. We have our own importance in the significance of this fabric, you know, the fabric which is our lives and in this telling, which is the fabric of America in telling.
Okay.
Do you understand?
Okay.
I mean,
wow.
We didn't just start this.
Yes.
You know, this is part of the payoff of something you started when you were probably about 8 or 9 years old, something like that, you know. And it's the universe saying, okay, this is what you must do now. This is the next part of your legacy, your journey.
Yes.
Yeah, that has little or nothing to do with me or with Alex. It has to do with you.
Okay. Okay, so I'm beginning to understand you in that because as I move more into my spirituality, it's like I'm interested in developing my craft and with speech class and technique and voice and dance and the craft of an artist. Yet I realize the more I develop as a person and my spirituality, the more I'm able to be available as an artist to
exactly
be the,
exactly
the
there is your rootedness right there, and as you are a part of that surrender and that enlightenment, that will carry you exponentially farther than you ever could have imagined or set down as a thought concept.
Mm. Thank you for that. Thank you so much. Thank you for that. Thank you, Brian. How can I get some materials over to you? I know you're working on a lot of things, and I'd love to be in your network or be able to reach out to you.
You can contact me through my Haley Author. com, and you'll reach me directly. And you know, I would love for us to get together because I have not only the properties of the Mary Lou Vester materials and some things that I worked on that Alex did not live to see happen, but they are available to me. But together with that, materials that I have just written over the years, put in a box. And they're just looking for a producer, looking for a voice, looking for the next phase. And I know that I don't really have to extend myself for that. The universe will simply pick up those aspects of what is necessary to make those happen.
Yes.
So it seems as though our connection now is important. And so that's what we do.
Yes.
That's what we do. We get together, you and me, and we move forward.
Wonderful. Thank you so very much. You've confirmed for me what I've been suspecting for a while now. It's like I'm passionate to tell stories that have to be told. You know, I speak for a living, and you know, you have to come up with the motivation. If it's a Burger King commercial, nothing wrong with it. That it has its place. Yet now I feel like I'm moving into a place where I've got to fortify my soul with the quality of the stories that I tell.
Thing is, you've already done that. That's why other things are revealing themselves to you,
okay,
and telling you where you're going to go next. You've already done that work.
Okay.
You know, you simply now have to follow through.
Ah, wow.
Because the manifestation is waiting for you to do that.
Oh, wow. Wow. thank you so much. I am honored. I truly am, and really, really, truly grateful. I
let me call it here, just because of Brian, you know, you're just sitting. He's actually been quiet for more than 10 seconds.
Well, it's hard when you come in. Yeah, it's kind of hard when you come in.
I would just add one other thing.
That's the voice.
I would just add one other thing. You are already personalizing the fulfillment. What the next phase requires of you is to simply act. You know, if you don't put yourself out there for the next leg of your evolution and your fulfillment, it will not happen. That's your work. That's your task. Simply step up for the next phase because you've already paid for it. That check has been written.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
It's time for the sleeping giant to awaken, Mr. Xavier.
And you know what a gift, and it means so much for you to say that to me.
It's okay. I say it all the time. If you visit the show more. Oh, you're talking about Miss Dr. Haley.
Okay. I mean, coming from Brian, it has a certain charm, but
often what happens is we sit on the edge of the dock, and we put our line in the water, and we say, "Oh God, please give me a fish! Please give me a fish!" Yes. You know, and without realizing, the fish has been in there on your line all day. All it took was for you to pull it up.
All along, exactly that, right? Exactly that, and I look at. I'm more interested now in learning the ways that I get in my own way and learning to experience a healing, so that I can feel that I deserve good things, that I am now available for the gifts when they arrive, available for the responsibilities that come along with those gifts and all of the capabilities and competencies and so forth, so that it's a real integral experience. And I can share that it's incredibly exciting. I'm so open to learning, and I can't tell you what an exciting conversation this has been. Thank you so much.
Well, you already have deposited in the bank, and what you're asking me is, what do I write the check for? You write the check for whatever it is you desire. It's already there. All you have to do is, with gratitude, write the check and sign your name.
The signing of your name is the action.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
And when you write
sign
that
your
check,
name, that's right.
Brian
that's
Hammer
you
Jackson,
to do.
One K.
Wait a minute.
Hey, I'm just glad you said that.
You've already done the work. You don't have to sit around and meditate. You don't have to sit around and visualize. All of that has already been done. Okay. Write the check.
An experience.
Brian Hammer Jackson.
Right now.
That's right.
We work great together, Dr. Hammer Haley. I can get a lot of checks out of this interview.
It's already been done.
I want to thank the great Xavier Paul. Not only a terrific talent, this man reaches out to a lot of people, helps them out. He's in a specialty area which develops your voice, your speech. And I think it's a great, great field he's in, and he's the number one in his field.
Xavier, please contact my business manager, Artenia Walker. I'm going to tell her to get ready for your call because we need to go ahead and write some texts together.
Oh, my gosh.
Some what?
Absolutely. I'd love that, Dundun. And I guess Kelly has that information. She's the show producer.
We will get that information to you.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I will get on this this week, and then we'll set up a time and go from there. I'm based here in New York City, which I trust you are, in the tri-state area. Wonderful. And fantastic. Yeah.
Xavier, who brought this to you?
Wow. I keep hearing that name, Brian the Hammer Jackson, but, you know, you get so much spam these days. Who knows?
He's so bad. We're going to have to spank him. We are.
Spade and neuter.
I'm trying to be good here. I did not bring up spanking one time.
I tell you, he sucked, but it was pretty good.
All right, thank you so much, Xavier. You're more than welcome to stay because I'm going to get to a couple more people, and if you have more questions, because we're going to get more involved here. I'd like to introduce you because I'd like I know Ms. Moore has some questions too. I want to get to another two people who are very, very, how can I say, motivational in my life, professional people I adore. One, her name is Doctor. She's also a doctor. Dr. Mel Cottle. She's also an author. She has published, I think, close to 9 books. A lot of it is how-to because she helps a lot of people. Along with Dr. Mel is Robbie Cook, Cook Stroud, who is also a professional. She owns, she's a part owner of a talent agency that helps a lot of actors get their start. She gives them a fair shake. She's also my business partner with the MVP On Demand Network, as well as Dr. Mel. Dr. Mel, how are you? Would you like to ask a question to our great guest, Dr. Haley?
I am just honored to be on the same show with her.
Oh, my gosh. I am so happy to meet you. Thank you.
Well, I have followed ever since I was, I guess, a little girl, number one, you know, your husband's work. And I started out when I went to college to become a American history buff, and I concentrated, of all things, on the Civil War.
Yeah,
so
right.
So anything that, you know, had to do with that, I was just mesmerized with. And, you know, I still go to some of the reenactments and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, what your husband brought, I guess, to the world, to, I guess, people my age even now, as a young generation, it cannot be underestimated whatsoever.
That was very kind of you to say.
And I just want that known. I mean, it's just fabulous. Fabulous. And, you know,
thank
like
you.
Brian said, I've written several books, but nothing will ever come to the capacity of that. So,
well, thank you so much for saying that. You know, but, you know, as a woman writer, I know that you know the seat of your soul and that you write from that place. And you have you have your own position in the universe. And it's like, you know, if you look through a kaleidoscope, you know, we all are part, you know, of different colors and different images and different shapes and whatnot. But we make up that different picture that is always shifting. And it's just marvelous when, you know, when women writers are involved because, you know, we write from that womb of ourselves. And you give so much.
Yes,
and
it's very self-disclosing when you write because you're opening up your soul to the world.
And not only that, you're writing from everything that you are and always have been.
Yes. I do that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I write a lot of screenplays as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, like one of my books is How to Take Your Personal Life Experiences to Base a Character or a Plot Off of. And I truly believe that, you know, every experience that you go through, every person that you meet along the way or even talk to changes you.
Oh, without a doubt. And
as a
writer, without a doubt, it, you know, it's like you don't write, but that the writer gets changed in the process.
Yes.
And I know that you fully
you
fully understand that. And it's like everything that you have been, everything you have evolved into goes into the process of writing. And that's what's really scary to some people because you have to surrender that. You have to open that up, you know, because, you know, that blank page or that computer screen that has nothing on it can make idiots of us all because it is so frightening.
Yeah,
it demands that we open up ourselves.
After that, it's a no-brainer, you know?
Yes, exactly. You know, I mean, well, it'll take you to your knees, you know. It'll say, okay, it'll take all your fears and put them right there in front of you, you know, for you to have to deal with.
Yeah, I agree totally. So how did you get into writing personally? I'm always curious to know that about other writers.
I really didn't have much of a choice because when I got with Alex, I had been doing academic writing up to that point, but the demand for what was necessary for Alex at the time was so pressing there was no choice. It was that we simply had to get to the job. We simply had to do it. There was no doubt. There was no sitting around, you know, making, you know, thoughtful constructs. You just simply had to sit down and do it. Once you've done it, once you've gone through the process, I mean, it doesn't take away from the fact that with each time, you will have to address yourself again. But the fact that, you know, you've done it, and your willingness to embrace the adventure is out there.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And as a person, let's say for yourself, Brian, stop me if I'm, you know, taking on your show here. But
No.
She's a fascinating woman.
It's a town hall meeting. I'm enjoying the interview. Go ahead. No, seriously, I like it.
Brian, behave yourself.
You know, what has been, I guess, the most instrumental to you or your favorite writings, and why?
Ask me that question one more time so that I can make sure that I answer you appropriately.
Yes, in your own writings, you know, yourself, what body of work really, I guess, encompasses you, and that, I guess, you're more proud of, and why?
Well, you know, I love, well, you know what, let's answer your question through you. What you're working on now is usually what you enjoy the most. You know, and it's like as you evolve, you continue to enjoy who you are at that moment, at that time. But I always kick back. Let me just add to that. I always kick back to, for me, the women of Greenway Street, my grandmother, and the women of the strong day worker brigade of Greenway Street, and listening to these strong women and, you know, knowing that I'm a part of the corpuscles of who they are, and learning and growing, and, you know, the courage of who they are. My grandmother gave me something that was my ticket that I always used. I was about 4 years old, and my grandmother had this little ticky-tacky house, you know, that is like a quilt in progress that started out like with a living room and a kitchen and a dining room or something, and you add on rooms as you could afford them. Well, my room was in the front, and grandmother's room was in the back. Grandmother always started her work around 4 o'clock in the morning. And so I would wake up, and I would launch out of bed, run down the hall to grandmother's room, and I would arrive at the threshold of her bedroom in this misty blue of the morning, listening to the C&O Railroad come across, you know, with the coal and whatnot. And it was like dawn was just about to deliver itself, and I'm standing there looking at this rounded lump that was my grandmother, and I would just launch myself into the bed, and this was our routine for every day that was blessed in my young life. I would lay on her belly with my face inches from her face, and she would breathe on me, and I would breathe on her. Because she taught me that that's where our connection was, because that was where God was, and everything else evolved out of that blessedness. That's what you write from. That's who you write from. That's who I am. And I'm sure you know every single bit of what I have just told you, that you have connected with every single bit of what I have just said.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, it's just, I don't know, you know, you look back literally at the impact, okay, of what your husband has done, and then let's start with, and you'll appreciate this, the historical significance and the research that you had to do for your book, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's overwhelming because you have this desire not only to get it right, but there's something in your heart that says you have to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do this justice to it. And
well,
I think both of us, I may be stepping out of line, but I think both of us having a PhD, we tend to seek that truth.
You're right. You know, that's in the soft tissue of who we are. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're simply doing it each day. We're just doing it. You know, you can talk about it all you want to, but you have to do it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt. I'm losing audio. Is anybody else hearing what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. I'm hoping we can hang on. It's Blog Talk is out of my control, so we'll keep on going and hopefully it'll settle down. Didn't mean to interrupt you. Please continue.
Now, are you going to turn your book into a screenplay at any point, or has it already been done?
I have set my intention and put it in the universe that I would like to see it as a film or a miniseries. And you know, as yourself as a writer and as a woman writing from the seat of your soul, that when you set your intention like that, you have to walk away from it because the universe has its own mind. You know, if you try to get in
right.
there and you decide that you're going to guide God, it's like you say, oh, well, you know, you're not working fast enough. And, you know, I think I really want this screenplay done yesterday. You interfere with the whole process. You simply have to go on to something else because it's organic. You know, you could just continue with who you are and let the universe play out. You know, it doesn't need our help. It'll do it.
Well, I would love to offer my services and give you a sample of what I can do with your book.
I would love it.
Several screenplays from books, and I won 2 international contests to convert novels into screenplays.
Wow.
And
you have
I
a feeling of destiny? I mean, how exciting. Doesn't it feel exciting in your spine?
No, I would be thrilled. And I promise you, I would not destroy the context and the love that is in your book. It would come from my heart through yours.
Well, you know, I trust that because the universe would not allow it to be anything else. You know, I mean, if we were not supposed to do it, we wouldn't do it. The fact that we're talking about it simply says that it's a confirmation of a deed already done.
And I think, and I want to remind everybody, and thank you, Dr. Melissa Cottle, and her heart is really big. My Dr.
I love it.
She
Please be in touch with my manager, Arsenia Walker. We wouldn't even be talking this if some aspect of it was not important and significant that was already done. Do you understand what I mean? I know you do,
yeah.
Because I'm
talking
to you.
Oh, I do. I understand.
Soul.
There's not really any coincidence in life.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
I'm going to give.
Oh, you can
I'm sorry.
Give her, you know, my site, but some of my books are literally how to develop and write screenplays. And Beat Cheese, and I'm a producer, so.
Oh, you know what? Let me tell you something else. I have just finished 2 projects that I think you might be interested in. One is some people came to me asking me to write a one-man show about based upon the life of Alex, and I did, you know, the drama, the poignancy, the funny,
all this
kind of stuff. You know, it's done. But, you know, it would take someone of your capacity and your skills to really step in because, you know, I'm a novelist, and you know, you have different skills. The other is I just finished writing a television series called Strutter's Ball. That has to do, you know, you remember the coming out parties, you know, during the 30s and 40s and whatnot?
Yeah.
Bring that to today. Bring that to contemporary time, you know, and add exciting and quirky characters, you know, and turn that into a television show. You've got Strutter's Ball. And what it needs is someone of your skill, because I've already written it. You know, it just needs someone of your skill to turn it into.
Touch it up and get it to where it needs to be.
Exactly, you know. But
I understand.
It's
all
there.
And I'll be honest, I could not write a fiction novel if I had to, because I think screenwriting, and I'm serious about this. And I can write books, I can write whatever, you know. But when I try to all that novel, that's a gift in itself, and so is screenwriting.
Well, you know, your skill is very different from mine. What
yes,
I have
is.
Already done
People
is
don't
provided
understand
you
that, but
the
it's
fodder.
Totally different skill.
You know, I've provided you the fodder. You come in and you define it because it's already there. It's already laid out. The treasure trove is yours to open.
Melissa. I would suggest that you put a character in there like a Brian the Hammer Jackson, just for the romantic part.
We already have Brian.
Part of it.
Okay.
We already have. There's a character that you would fit right there. I know.
Really? Is he a kind of like a leading man, sexy kind of guy? Is that what you have in mind?
And, you know, not only that, we need the screenplay done for the Mary Lou Vester book. That's the first of six books. And,
well,
you know,
then send them my way. I did the whole, have you ever heard of Dreamweaver?
I think so.
We're going to get right back to that. We have so many people holding. And, Dr. Mel, please don't leave. Robbie, really quickly.
Yeah, we need to exchange numbers.
Oh, you are?
Oh, definitely.
You are. In fact,
definitely.
In fact, Diane, can you do me a favor? Can you bubble Dr. Mel? When we say bubble, that means we go private. Nobody else can hear. And can you make sure Dr. Mel gives you the pertinent information that we could give to Dr. Haley?
Yeah, you want to speak with my manager, Arsenia Walker, and we'll just get ourselves together, you know, make this manifest.
All right, we can do this.
We sure can. You know how I put myself in this. Okay, here we go.
That's why we love you, Brian. You connect people.
Thank you.
Bring up social issues that are important.
I sound like a venereal disease. Thank you, Dr. Melissa Cottle.
Oh, my God.
We have so many
impossible.
People.
Impossible. All
right.
We have, and Robbie's here. I'm thinking Robbie's here, too.
Yeah,
I'm going to go to the people who came in.
Robbie.
Yeah. Robbie is also a professional, Dr. Haley. She's not only, she's a half partner. She's a partner of one of the, I would say, best talent agencies around. She's also my partner on MVPOnDemand.com as well as Dr. Mel. And Robbie, would you like to ask Dr. Haley a question?
Hi, Robbie. Hi,
Dr. Haley. Yes, the question I have, which when we were kids watching Roots, we loved it, and it really makes a big impact on our lives. I don't understand why each generation doesn't get to see that, like The Wizard of Oz every year. We should see Roots every year.
Yeah.
And I was also wondering, is there going to be a sequel to The Roots? I think would be awesome.
I lost the last part of your question. Ask me that again.
Is there going to be a sequel? I think there should be a sequel to Roots. I just love the whole atmosphere. And then for it to come across, you know, maybe 10 years later, Roots 2, you know, around 50 years later.
Well, you know what, Robbie, I'm so glad you asked me that, because I don't really know. I don't know what is going to manifest at this point. But had Alex lived, let me tell you what would have happened. I spent 7 years of my life working with 14 researchers crisscrossing the world for a piece that was a companion to Roots that has not seen the light of day. It is called The Merging, and let me tell you why. Alex's white side of the family began with a man named James Jackson Sr. in Ballybay, Ireland in 1797. His son, James Jackson Jr., was a part of the Irish Rebellion. He was so bad. He was like Brian. He had to get out of town. And his father sent him across on Ship America. And he went through his middle passage just as Kunta did, but in a different way because he was white, you understand? And he arrived in Philadelphia. Now, the white side of Roots came across to tell the development of our country. It came across to talk about the manifestation of presidents, how different things evolved, the pioneer aspect of our country, and all of the things that happened in the white side. And there were many James Jackson Juniors. I think they ran out of names and just kind of stuck with this one. But this James Jackson Jr. was involved in the Civil War. He was wounded and his arm was shot off, and so he came back home. When he came back home, he fell in love with a black woman slave, a very pretty slave whose name was Esther. From their union was the woman Queen. Queen was the antecedent of the Haley line. That story was the merging. Queen was the merging of the white and black side, Roots and the white side, and telling this story. No one has told this tale, and it was documented by me and my researchers at about 37 beacon boxes of documents that tell every single aspect of the family line and that union, which actually tells the story of not only blacks in America, but whites and all of the rest of us in our connections and our antecedents. That is waiting to be told.
Wow,
well,
you got to hear that.
I'm glad I asked that question, too, because now we know and now we brought it to life.
That's true. And, Robbie, I'm going to get right back to you. All of a sudden, our board is blowing up. I'm going to get right back to you. This is a gentleman. His name is Chris Berry. You've seen him in every film. I mean, he worked with Brad Pitt in his movies, Django. You're going to like him, Dr. Haley. He played a character in Django that he put black people in the cages and said naughty, naughty, naughty things to them. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce one of my favorite actors, Mr. Chris Berry.
Well,
how are
thank you?
You
very much, Brian. I'm good. Thank you, sir. Dr. Haley, first I'd like to say it's an honor to be speaking with you, ma'am. And number two,
it
I
is
hope
mutual.
That you,
thank you.
And I hope that you take everything that Brian says, particularly about me, with a grain of salt.
Oh, thank you.
We're on to Brian, aren't we? We are on to him.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, are you? Oh, okay.
The truth is, I was in Django, but I would like to just... From my personal perspective, I've come in off of a film just recently. It just recently premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival called 12 Years a Slave.
Yes. I'm excited to see that. Yes.
Oh, I am too. It's getting fantastic reviews, and I had a chance to work with the great Chiwetel Ejiofor and the director, Steve McQueen, who was fantastic. And I played a particularly despicable man in history, a slave trader from Washington, D.C., by the name of James Birch.
Yes.
But I got a chance to get a little bit immersed in this, and of course, you know, I study everything that I can about the topics that I'm working on, and so I've been reading some stuff, and there was two things that I wanted to talk to you about today, just right quick. I know that there's a lot of people, but I was reading a Washington Post interview that you had given, and you were speaking about your character, Mary Lou Vestin. It just something struck me that you said that I'd like to make mention of. You said, and I'm quoting here, it says, you said, "I make her a designer with hopes and dreams that someday she will get to the point that she can control her own destiny by getting to the rarefied air where you're such a public figure that nobody is going to threaten to sell you away." And I had to read that a couple of times because at first it seems kind of innocuous, just sort of a benign statement, but when you really kind of think about the implications of that you know, you have a human being that her entire aspiration is to get to a point where, not that she's free, but that she doesn't have to be afraid of being sold away. I just wanted to say that really, it was struck me quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And just that statement alone makes me want to read the book even more.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. And Dr. Haley, he's such a good actor. What he did to prepare for this role is he went into the ghetto and tried to purchase black people.
Oh.
Anyway.
He's a method actor.
Not so much.
Not
I live in
method,
New Orleans.
He's received several Emmy Awards and was nominated for an Oscar at one point.
Oh, my God. How wonderful.
Well, But moving on, I wanted to ask you this. You had also said something else about the institution of slavery that I found interesting, and given your vast knowledge of it, I'd like to just sort of ask if you could elaborate it. You had spoken about how slavery, from its inception and to the point where you get to the, you know, the Civil War period, it underwent this transformation. How it started out as this sort of indentured servitude, and then it became this thing that literally led to an entire group of people being viewed as inferior, as a sort of institutionalized sort of inferiority placed on Africans, African Americans. And I was just wondering if you could maybe elaborate on that, just sort of from how slavery morphed into this thing that literally took hold of the American psyche.
Well, aren't we looking at a study in power? Aren't we looking at making decisions based upon, you know, our personal needs that may or may not affect others in positive or negative ways? It's not like, you know, if I make an economic decision and it affects you, it's not that I like you or dislike you. I made a decision for me, and it just it affected you. That happened a lot during that period, you know. It was that there was a group of people that, whites, take the Levesters, for example. They loved Mary. She had been a part of their household for almost 50 years. She was considered a part of the family. However, with the shifting sands of what was happening with the war, they mm-hmm. had to make new decisions that affected
right.
their economics. In so doing, those shifting sands affected Mary, and she realized how tenuous her she had a hold on things, and how tenuous was their hold on things. You know, that up until that point, she had felt a modicum of security. She had lived fairly well, you know, as many slaves did during that time. However, she also realized now with the war, if something happened to Levesters, she could have been sold, you know, in an instant. She could have been a field slave, or she could have been, you know, somebody's concubine or whatever, you know. And she had no say-so about it. But neither did they have say-so about a lot of things that were happening to them. Look at the cluster of the whole. Don't look at this, at the parts. Look at the sum of the parts.
No, that's you're absolutely right. That's very enlightening. I hadn't thought of it in quite that way. It's interesting to me how economics can be such a deep seated motivator in human behavior. I mean, then and now, and even to the point where it literally otherwise people that consider themselves good, decent, you know, Christian people could literally, just based upon an economic decision, to do something that we today would look at as just absolutely atrocious and abominable and unthinkable. But
and, you
thank
know,
you for sharing your insights. I appreciate that.
Together with that, you know, they may not have even been conscious enough to say, I'm making an economic decision. They were trying to survive, weren't they? They were simply trying to control their own lives as best they could, in a time which was a very gray area for them as well. And so they were making day-to-day decisions about survival, and those decisions were affecting a lot of other people that they had power over. They had influence over. Right? It wasn't that they were trying to do anything bad to them. They were trying to survive.
Right. It was just basic necessity to them.
That's pretty good questions there. We're live right now talking to the great Dr. Mai Haley. The book that we're talking about is called The Treason of Mary Levester. It's on sale now at the Amazon. You go to Amazon.com, you can see her book. We're going to get to the reviews in a bit. They are great reviews.
Brian, it's also available through the Nationwide Barnes & Noble.
Oh, cool.
Is it available as an ebook? Because I have a Barnes & Noble Nook account, and I would love to start reading it right now.
Please do. And you know what? It would be helpful to me that if you would get back to me after you have written it, because I'm well into finishing the second book of the series.
Mm-hmm.
So if
you
have comments, it would be helpful to me to help me improve as I continue to do the series.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to. I don't know that I would necessarily listen to little old me, but I'll definitely give you some feedback. I can't wait to dig into it.
And Dr. Haley,
I appreciate it.
And Dr. Haley is nice enough to give a free gift. I think it's a free gift. If not, I'll pay for it because it's a wonderful gift.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody here has a Kindle, she's nice enough to give a free downloadable. I don't know what you call it, just downloadable of the book. Am I correct, Dr. Haley?
I think you're not. I think I think that was last week because Amazon did a whole promotion where you could download it for free. But I think they concluded it last week.
I'll tell you what.
Wrong. So Yeah, check into
that. It's okay. I'll still buy the book and give it to you. I'll buy the book and I give it as a gift. If we have enough time, we have a special game in honor of Dr. Haley where everybody here, including Chris Berry, can play. If we have enough time. Let me get to, here's another man who's been very, I hope he's still there. I don't see him. Oh, yeah, he's there. This is a man, Dr. Haley, who's been very, very influential in my life. I never met the man, but I interviewed him twice. He is a pastor. When you hear him speak, you can feel his heart. His words will cut through your soul like a knife because they're true. Without further ado, my friend, Pastor Vision Jones. Hello, sir. Thank you for coming to the show, Pastor Jones.
Good afternoon. Thank you
for
having me.
Hello, Pastor. I'm glad to meet you.
Happy to meet you as well, Dr. Haley. I'm very much appreciating you being on and enjoying what you have had to say so far and enjoying this dialogue we're having. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian, I thank you and Kelly and Diane and all of your staff and guests there for having me on the show today.
My pleasure, sir.
Very elated to be here as a part of the conversation, and I'm thinking of a couple of things that, of course, they come from what I do as a civil rights leader in this part of Atlanta where Dr. King came from, and we're coming up on anniversaries after anniversaries. The next anniversary we're coming upon is the execution of Troy Anthony Davis on the 21st. And as we talk about roots and slavery and the impact of slavery, I just wanted to ask Dr. Haley, how do you think that ties in with some of the present that we're dealing with, such as mass incarceration and profiling? There's a story out today, I believe, of a high-ranking police officer that was stopped and frisked in New York by two white officers. That we're still dealing with the mindset of slavery, and how do you what you're doing in your activism that you're doing as what we're dealing with in slave mindset, I should say.
Well, you know, I'm sure that you, as a pastor, you've focused on the positive in the fact that Dr. King had a dream. We all have a dream. And what you as a pastor will probably embody and enhance for us and underscore is the fact that we all have dreams and we need to actualize them. We need to take action. We need to do something for ourselves. We have marvelous, marvelous people who are catalysts and initiators and whatnot, but what you are teaching us is that we also have to stand up for ourselves. We have to be our own leaders. We have to be out there doing something and that our march is a personal progress toward adding and enhancing the work of the world. And I'm sorry, are you speaking? I don't want to talk over you.
No, you're fine. I appreciate you saying that. You know, I wanted to ask you, where do you pull some of your inspiration from? Because, of course, you realize the power of word and what you've written and history. And we've been griots for so long. So here we are continuing it in the way that we do with our novels and what you're doing. And you know how much what you've written is truly going to impact the world. Who inspires?
Well, you know, yourself, you know, as a pastor, you know the power of the word and when you speak it, how it affects others. You know, it's a wave that goes out there once you release that word. I think that it's important because you're a storyteller and you teach us to tell our stories, to connect with each other, join our history, amplify our history in the sound of our stories. that a lot of times is missing from what we do. We need to hear who we are. We need to continue to repeat the stories of who we are. We need to go back home and listen to our grandparents and whatnot, tell about what they have been through, so we know we can remember and underscore who we are as we continue our journey in today. We have to personalize that history. You know, we don't need to objectify our leaders way down, you know, with so much dates and data. We need to personalize that, you know, and join our stories with other stories and continue what is important in amplifying that. Don't you think? I mean, as a pastor, you know, and listening to your word, we know what the power of what it means to say, in the beginning was the word. That's
right.
What you teach us.
Right. And the Bible writes as well, it says the word was God and the word is God. So
don't you know?
We have to understand that it is the same then, the same power that lies within it then, still lies within our spoken word today.
Exactly. And what you teach us is the positive aspect of that word. I mean, you teach us also about the consequences that if we constantly are saying the negative aspect of the word, that we have to pay for that too. But what you teach us also is that when we lay down like bricks the power of that positive word, what we are building, you know, in terms of our fellowship, in our connections, in our future.
I wanted to point out, too, because you said something about being positive in our history. The reason I started off that way is because I often have to tell people our history did not begin with slavery.
Exactly.
We have a rich history that predates it by thousands upon thousands of years.
Exactly, we do.
We need to know about ourselves. If you go on my Facebook page, you will always see me saying, know thyself. And I know Brian.
Know thyself.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pastor. Go ahead. I didn't mean to step on you.
No, please, go ahead.
I was just listening to you two talk about our stories and about our grandparents, and you tell stories. I remember very well a great story my grandmother used to tell me. It was a short story, but I remember it well. She looked at me and said, "You're a moron," in the story.
Wise woman. Very wise, wise woman.
A very wise woman. Thank you, Pastor.
No, that was me. The pastor is being clear. That was me, too.
Oh, that was great.
Pastor and Brian, let me share with you a blessing that my grandmother shared with me a long time ago. And I'm sure that I will speak to exactly what you know as young people as well. When my grandmother would come home at the end of the day after having, you know, scrubbed floors and done whatever were her day worker or janitorial duties or whatnot, and she had prepared the family meal and cleaned up the kitchen, and she would come into the living room and sit in her big rocker next to the fake fireplace and where the mantelpiece was, where the Jesus Saves sign was on one end and the funeral calendar was on the other.
Uh-huh.
And she would sit me on her lap. And my grandmother had gone as far as the third grade, you know, up in this one-room schoolhouse up in the mountains, so you can imagine what kind of education that was.
Yeah.
But she would open a book. You know, she would only work for white people who had children my age so that she could see what they were doing for their kids so she could do it for me. And so she would bring home a book that she had learned about that they were teaching their white kids. I didn't know that my grandmother couldn't read. But she would tell me the story and turn the pages. But one of the things that she did, and I'm sure this will amplify for you too, Pastor, is that she would put my hand as a child up next to her throat so that I could feel the power of words and the effect of those words that could be had in the world. That's what we need today. Those storytellers.
Yes.
Make it personal.
That's really interesting. Well, I remember as a child in church, as a little tiny kid, I remember putting my head against my ears against my mother's chest and hearing her sing the hymns.
That's right.
And and that really, I mean, still, even now, just thinking about it, it just gives me shivers because it's so powerful.
Yes.
Absolutely. And when you start connecting the heartbeats of all of those storytellers,
uh-huh.
I mean, just think about that. That is a juggernaut bigger than any tsunami wave.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Yes, ma'am.
We're running out of time. What we're going to do is we're going to get to one more person. After we get to one more person, we're going to go back to everybody. You'll have about at least a minute in your private time with Dr. Haley. And we're still going to discuss her book, but I just want to make sure we get there. Pastor Vision Jones, thank you so much. Please stay with us. I'm going to introduce you to another person. His name is Paul Hunter. His story is unbelievable, Dr. Haley. He's he has a book out, too. He is also an author. And correct me if I'm wrong, is it the 13th child? Or 19th child. I'm sorry, the 19th child. His mother had 23 kids.
He was tired.
21.
Yeah. I still remember the spanking. But anyway, she had 21 children, dirt poor. They didn't know what to do. He wrote a book about his life. It's a very, very emotional book. Without further ado, I'll let Mr. Paul Hunter talk and tell his story. Mr. Hunter, meet Dr. Haley.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Hunter.
I'm glad to meet you, Dr. Haley. What I want to say is that I am the 19th child out of 21 natural children. I am the first to graduate from college, the first to write a book, which is No Love, No Charity, the success story of the 19th child. I have a question for you, Dr. Haley. I wanted to know, how can my book receive national attention, and how can I get my screenplay into the hands of movie producers, because I have a screenplay which is entitled The Two Faces of E.
You know, I could answer your question in a very technical way. I could tell you that, you know, it's very difficult and you need to get an agent, and I would tell you that, you know, all the paces that you have to go through to get an agent. You know, I would tell you that I could tell you that, you know, you need to go to Hollywood and connect with the Writers Guild and all this kind of stuff, but I'm not going to. What I will tell you is, what you do is you set your intention every day. That's your work, and it will happen. What you do when you set your intention is you simply give it back to the universe, and you go out and play. Don't work on it. Don't task it. Don't call anybody. Go play, because you've already given it back to the universe. The universe doesn't need your help in making it happen. You have already done the work. Leave it alone and allow the universe to manifest it for you. Trust that. Your work is trusting it. Your work is working your faith, working your purpose. You leave it alone. You go into something else. The universe will handle it. It does not need your help. All the right people will come to you. All the right circumstance will come to you. Leave it alone.
Wow.
Thank you very
much.
That's
pretty good advice. Wow. And I'd like to know that Paul did very well on, I like to know, I'm tongue-tied. That was just good advice there. That's pretty good. Paul did pretty good.
Because you know what? You will get out there, and you're going to mess it up, let me tell you. You're going, because there will be a ton of people who will read your story and say, oh, yeah, this is wonderful. Oh, I can do this for you and that for you. And you'll get diverted in 100 and different ways, like a child spinning top. You won't recognize your own colors. Leave it to the universe. The universe knows what you need. Go on to something else. The next phase of your journey, the next book that you need to do, it does not need your help.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, Mr. Hunter?
You know what? She is absolutely right, because I have been, you know, reading some material, and some things you just have to let go and let the universe, you know, do its job.
Exactly, because, Mr. Hunter, you will dig your own pit. you will start digging doubt. You will start digging, you know, impatience. You will start digging con people. You'll start promoting all of these other things into your life that you absolutely don't need. Leave it to the universe, because the universe has blessed you thus far with this work and with this telling. Did it need you to do anything other than who you are, tell who you are and tell your story? That's all it asks of you. Now it's asking of you, you've done the work, leave it alone. It's like, okay, you've done what you're supposed to do, leave it to me. You know, I'm credentialed in a way that you're not. And I'm speaking as the universe. I'm credentialed in a way that you're not. So don't get in my way. You tell me what you want to do with it, set your intention, and let me go to work. That's my job. That's the job of the universe. Your job is to get out of the way.
Dr. Haley's on fire. Look at that. I want to get out and write a book, and I can't even spell. You know, we're going to be right back, because when we come back, we're just going to take a 15-20 second break. I'm going to get a glass of water. When we come back, we're going to talk about the book, and then and we still have time. All of us is going to play a fantastic game I just made up.
Oh, Brian, ask Mr. Hunter if I answered his question.
Mr. Hunter, did she? He can hear you. Did she answer your question, sir?
Yes, 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 he did.
Okay.
Yes, he did.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Go
ahead.
If you give me Mr. Hunter's phone number, or give it to Robbie. Have him call
me. Mel's still here. I was looking for you,
yeah.
And I couldn't find you.
Oh, no, I'm still here. But I can answer some of those questions for you, how to get those into the right hands.
She's the right person to do that, too. She has written many screenplays. She's the owner of an agency. So when we come back in about 30 seconds, we'll get those written. But when we come back, those answer to you, Paul, when we come back, we're going to talk about her book. And if we have time, we're going to play my favorite game, How Much Do You Know About Roots? You'll love this game.
I can't wait.
Brian, you are so bad.
I know. I need that spanking. We'll be right. Sorry, Pastor. We'll be right back in 30 seconds. Dr. Haley's on fire.
She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
Hunter again, just briefly?
Sure. Sure. Mr. Hunter, are you there?
No, I'm here.
Okay,
Mr.
Paul,
Hunter.
You're on with Dr. Haley.
Mr. Yes. Hunter, your task right now, you know, as I put it into my my universe, is that all you have to do is be grateful. Work, gratitude, That's all you have to do. Be grateful, because it is already in manifestation. By the fact that you have done it, it is already in manifestation, and it will fulfill for you. Your job now is to be grateful and to be happy and to just wait, because it's coming. You know, it's like a guest that you know is going to arrive. You're not exactly sure what date it's coming, but you know that it's coming. And so you're real, real happy about it, and you're preparing the guest bedroom, you know, and you're putting fresh sheets on the bed and all of that, polishing the furniture, and getting everything ready. That's, you know, that's your job right now. It is happening for you already. Do you understand? Do you understand
me? Yes, I do.
Okay, just be grateful and be happy. And, you know, do something for somebody else and forget about it. Because it's already happening.
I would write a check to Brian Hammer Jackson.
Brian, what are we going to
okay,
do with this guy?
Sorry. Well, you know, here we go. Let me tell you how wonderful Dr. Haley is. Her book, we didn't really talk about it that much, The Treason of Mary Lavester. It's based on a true story, you guys. It's about a seamstress. She's a slave from the Confederate town of Norfolk, Virginia. When her owner gets involved with modifications to an ironclad CSS Virginia, Mary copies the plan and sets out to commit treason against the South, facing certain death as a spy if she gets caught. She treks 200 miles. She had no car. Gas prices were really high. She trekked 200 miles during the bitter winter of 1862 to reach the office of the Union Secretary of the Navy, Gideon Wells, where she hands over the plans. Mary's acts of bravery is admirably told by Haley, using a rich narrative and character drawn from the pinnacle of American history. First there was Roots, now there is a treason. Mary Lavester. We're going to take it from there. Please tell us about your book and how did you begin writing it? What gave you the inspiration of writing this particular book, Dr. Haley?
Well, Alex and I had finished the miniseries, Roots, the Next Generation, and I knew I wanted to do something, a work about women, you know, and I wanted to honor the women that I grew up with, that tapestry of strength back in Greenway Street in West Virginia, on my grandmother's front porch, all that day worker brigade of strength and courage and honor. And there were a lot of different personalities I could have written about. Certainly they were marvelous women. They always have been. And so Alex tasked his master researcher, the one who actually did the research for Roots. That was not me. That was George Sims, this self-trained person who could have run circles around any academic who did the research for Roots. And he was like a mole. He lived in the Library of Congress. And so after a short time, he came back with this little blurb about this black woman spy, you know. And I had set it aside because I was still working on Alex's project. But it did intrigue me, and then later he brought me some more material, and, you know, I was further intrigued. And then later there came a time that I was able to go to Norfolk and verify what she had done. It was always a very scant framework of what had happened, and that allowed me to be able to tell the story that I wanted to tell, because, you know, there were possibly two versions. One was that she was a free woman and she was married to this guy from Guadalupe who owned a bar and, you know, in Norfolk. I didn't want to tell that story. I want to tell my own story of her living in the big house and her relationship with the family and, you know, what it would have cost her ultimately. You know, once she was in proximity of those plans, you know, and a lot of times, just like in our own personal stories, it's like, you know, we can be up next to something, and we say, well, you know, God, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, it's like, you know, if I wasn't supposed to do something with it, why would the universe put me here in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to make a decision about that. Also, I wanted to connect with a woman who, it's like you ask yourself the question, what kind of person would be willing to lose everything in order to get these plans to the north? I mean, she was living in a modicum of security. She had lived most of her life in comfort, in good food and all of that. She's in proximity of these plans. And, you know, she has to ask herself, okay, now, if I copy these plans, okay, I have stepped out there into deep space and personal commitment. Now, what am I supposed to do with that? Because if anybody had even seen a corner of what she had copied, it was instant death. She had, by the commitment herself, that it would mean that she was all alone. She really could not even allow tales to her family and friends because it would have put them in personal jeopardy. So what kind of person would do that? You know, we are not usually motivated entirely by altruistic reasons. There has to be some personal motivation in that. What kind of motivation would get somebody to do that? And the real age of Mary Levester, I had to set it back in the story, but the real age of Mary Levester was about 56 years old, and the reason I had her walk was because at that time, I mean, there were all these restrictions about you couldn't travel anywhere. Even if she had been on a horseback with a permission slip, all you had to do was be white and say, let me see that permission slip, and tear it up in front of her face. And she was back in slavery. So I had her walk those plans, that 200 miles from Norfolk. And not only did she face the problems of survival, you know, on that walk, but she had somebody pursuing her who wanted nothing more than to see her dead. For my own research, in being able to do that, I was trained by an ex-FBI agent, because you don't go from average citizen today and tomorrow you're a spy. I mean, stealing government plans, come on, let's ask ourselves about that, you know? And so I was trained by an ex-FBI agent for many months because there's just so many things involved in hiding yourself out in the open. And then after my training with him, I had to go through many, many months of training with a survival specialist in Oregon who taught me that to take this woman who had lived most of her life enjoying the pleasures of a four-poster bed and a fireplace, and then the next day she's having to build a shelter out in the open and get her butt off of the ground, sleeping off the ground. How did she do that? How did she build a shelter? How did she survive? You know, I mean, if she got a stomachache, what kinds of things did she have on her in order to help her with that? Her food was definitely going to run out in a few days. So how did she gather food in the midst of one of the worst winters in Virginia? How did she keep warm? How did she keep her spirits up? One of the worst things that can happen to you on the trail is boredom. How did she keep her mind active? Not only that she had lost the love of her life, how did she assuage herself of grief in order to be able to do the task that she needed to do and then cry?
Wow. And this book is on sale now. I don't want her to get too much in it. That's enough of a thriller, enough of a teaser for you guys to run out right now. I just want to ask you a couple of questions. How long did it take you to complete this book? When did you start? And for the full completion, how many years or how many months did it take you to complete this book?
Well, as we talked when we first started out, it was right after, it was in the early 70s, right after the miniseries, that I began collecting material about her. Because I never wanted my interest to supersede anything that Alex was doing. I was a part of his team, And so when he died in 92, I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll pull her out now. Maybe that's her time. But it wasn't. I pulled her out, but it wasn't her time. It was my time because the universe was still working with me. And I had to go through several members of my family dying of cancer. Once you go through dealing with life and death and the aspects of daily living and trying to just host and nurse and, you know, walk in the shoes of trying to manage that kind of journey, you don't come out the other end, but that you're not changed. And I had grown in to the courage of my grandmother and those women on Greenway Street. I was now one of them. I had grown into Mary Levester's shoes. And so when I sat down to write the story, it took me 6 months.
6 months. When you mentioned before in the beginning of the interview, when you were actually working with Alex Haley, he went through a depression. Did you feel when you're writing this book and you got into care? I feel when you're writing this book, you were Mary. I think you were Mary. Seeing Mary, what would Mary do during the whole writing of the book? Am I far off here?
Oh, no, no. I had grown into her shoes. I was Mary.
Yeah.
I had transformed into Mary.
I could almost see you almost wearing what would Mary be wearing. Got into her character.
I was. That's
got into
correct.
Her head.
That's correct. That's correct. I wore poofy a lot, you know, because that's what Mary wore, you know, in order to keep the hair out of her face as she worked. You know, I transformed into Mary in lots of ways. Because the universe had worked with me, and that's
sure.
what I had become.
Now, when you were married, did you find yourself going into a depression here? We went through this with authors, and they locked themselves up. They tend to disconnect from the world when they're writing. I'm not a writer, but I can imagine. So if you're in your married world, did you find yourself going into a depression? Did you battle any kind of demons while you're finishing this book?
Never.
Okay.
Because the universe is always teaching you. You're always lifted up. I mean, even the negative aspects are just simply part of your journey. You know, that you live with and you live through, and the universe is just simply teaching you. So, I mean, there is not room for depression. Depression belongs to somebody who doesn't have positive. A positive way, you know, and I've
that's
always
a really
had a
good,
positive way.
That's a really good soundbite. Let me ask you a question. Did you ever remarry after Mr. Alex Haley passed away?
I married everything, every project, every aspect that the universe has asked me to take on. I am so fully married, you couldn't believe.
I could believe that. I feel like you and I are headed for a divorce by the time this interview ends.
Yeah, right. I know. Exactly.
I'd like to know, okay, now this is a question I'm going to ask. There's a lot of people here who are self-publishers, and it's very expensive to publish a novel, especially your first novel. When you wrote it, were you already connected to a publisher when you were writing The Treason of Mary Vester?
Let me tell you, this was faith in action, and this is like what I was talking to Mr. Hunter about. I was scheduled to – I did not have a publisher, and I did not even conscience doing self-publishing. I was simply waiting on the universe to tell me what I was supposed to do. So I was scheduled to speak at the Hampton Roads Museum, where it was at the time that Mary would have been launched in her story at the same time period. And I just was up there talking, telling the story of Mary Levester and me and all of that, just weaving it like any storyteller. And when I finished, this guy came up to me and he said, "I would like to publish your book. I'm head of my own company, and I would like to publish your book." And that's the way it happened.
Wow.
Wow.
We have 90 seconds live, but what that means, Dr. Haley, is that most of our audience who are at work right now, they tend to look at our podcast, so we have a bigger audience later on. They will access this. But while we have a lot of listeners live right now, would you please tell everybody how to purchase your book? It's a fantastic book. The reviews are unbelievable.
Thank you so much. You can go to Amazon.com and publish and download it, Kindle or ebook or whatever. You can also go to Barnes and Noble. They carry the book nationwide, and you know, or you can contact my manager, Arsenia Walker, who can direct you to other sources. What I get to do, which is wonderful, is I get to do just the creative, and she does everything else. So please, you know, if you have any questions whatsoever, know that we're available, and you know, we'll help you connect with the book in every way, and all of the other books that will come after it. You know, because I would love to know you as readers, and I would love you to know me.
Wow. I just want to say that we're going to go into podcast. Dr. Haley was so nice to give us 2 hours. If she allows us, we're going to go really quickly because in the middle of the interview, I asked you guys, think of your questions because we'll get 20 seconds. She's such a diamond that there's a lot of questions I know you guys want to ask. So you'll have a question to ask Dr. Haley, and when we'll go there. If she's still here, I would love to play the Roots game that I just made up. You're going to love it. I call it... Chicken Georgia waffles.
You're impossible, Brian. You're impossible.
Chicken Georgia waffles.
Fine, call it the Root.
I mean, this guy is an imp. He is just an imp.
Remember, we're married during the interview.
I know.
And that's why your marriage is only last.
I know, it's on a rock.
That doesn't mean that you're not an imp and creative.
Yeah, that's true. So what we're going to do again, we're going to go back to the beginning. I want to thank our fabulous guests. I mean, Dr. Haley, the people who are here, they were looking so forward to talking to you, but they're professionals in their own right. They're leaders. They're strong people. They're creative people. And I wanted the best for you. And we got the best, our guests here. And we're going to go through each one of them again. And I'm sure they have one question. We'll start with Dr. Melissa Caudill. Do you have one question, an extra question for Dr. Haley?
I'd like to know what our future plans are with other books.
All you have to do is take both hands, place them at the lower portion of your stomach, which is the womb of us as women and as writers and our connection. There will be no doubt. You will simply be led.
Thank you.
I want to thank you, Dr. Mel. You are a publisher. She has helped so many people. She's a doctor. She has a PhD. She's an educator. And,
you take that and you weave it in the tapestry, you know, of things to come, and you allow the universe to speak to you.
And we're going to give you all the information so you and Dr. Mel can get together and brainstorm, and hopefully there'll be a connection, a business connection. She's very talented as well as you, Dr. Haley. I think it'll be a great friendship. Dr. Robbie?
It's not Dr. Robbie. I feel like a doctor.
Shh, what's wrong with me? I'm on a roll. Oh. Robbie.
Yeah. Dr. Haley, I just want to thank you so much for reconfirming. That's how I believe y'all. Put it out in the universe. Whether it's good or bad, you're going to get it. So I try to put nothing but positive in the universe, and it does work for me. So I just want to thank you for confirming.
Take your index finger and your middle finger and put it over your heart. I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Our fulfillment.
You see, I just get the middle finger,
but
thank you. Okay.
Thank you so much. You gave me
they time. Tend to forget the index finger with me, Dr. Haley.
You're
but...
in your eyes.
I'm going to go Kelly. Kelly Corbin, who is responsible for this fantastic interview, setting up things, making sure that I don't be a pain in the butt and act silly, Dr. Kelly. Kelly Corbin, do you have a question?
Can you see how much control I have over there?
Kelly, you've got your hands full. You've got your hands full.
I certainly do. No, I'm just thrilled that you were able to make it on, and I really want to thank you for coming on. And I've enjoyed how personable you are with everyone and how insightful you are. And, while I was sitting here watching, I was looking at a blog of yours, and not only are you writing and your life story and the story of the Civil War times and things like that, but then I find a blog that you're doing on organic gardening, and I'm just amazed. You are truly a woman who is so well-rounded. I just cannot even fathom how much more there is to know about you.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to do a food program with my farmers called Where Nobody Goes Hungry. Because I grew up in a little town where we didn't know hunger or homelessness or anything like that. I want to devote a portion of whatever I earn from my books and whatnot to a project where I bring in my organic farmers and my chefs, from around the world, and my home cooks, and we have a place of fellowship and happiness around good food and just be happy and bless each other, with that fellowship.
Oh, that's wonderful. I would love to be a part of that. That's an amazing thing for you to do, and I do. We are involved in that as well in past years. This year I don't happen to be because the weather has been so crazy. I don't have much of a garden myself this year. But in past years, one of the themes where I live here in Kansas is to plant an extra row in your garden just to give away, just to give to the food bank.
Yes.
Yes.
And you know what else is so wonderful? It's like, in this food program, what we do is we pay special attention to our senior people because they are our living treasures. They are our walking stories. So we want to feed them real good. But there are some marvelous farmers and cooks and whatnot who just want to help feed us. And
right. There's
no reason that we need to have anybody hungry in this world, And once you're fed, you don't have to think about that anymore. You can think about what it is you came here to do, right?
Right. You're absolutely right. That's amazing. I'll try to keep up on that with you and find out what you're doing and, where I can pitch in at any point. I'd be happy to.
Oh, that would be wonderful. We've got some fabulous chefs from the Strip, and we've got some great home cooks, and we've got these marvelous farmers, who just want to share with us their pure foods,
mm-hmm.
that are organic. We don't have to worry about pesticides and hormones and all of that kind of stuff in our food. And one of the things that, grandmother used to have an I-1 Institute in our food program is that we have a soup pot, a vegetable soup that never runs out. So that anybody, any time of day, can have a big thick slice of cornbread and butter and vegetable soup, so that you never, ever have to wonder, will I have a meal?
You
always say,
my
save
arms
a vegetable.
Just now on that.
Yeah, I always
you
say, save a vegetable. Date a farmer's daughter.
Thank
better
you,
cook for you. Okay, sorry.
But no,
Thank you so much.
You said that about the never-ending soup pot. My mother has been in the hospital quite well for several months now, and I had to pass through a very poor part of town to get to the hospital. And one thing I noticed every single day is there was this one little house, and there was a sign out beside the street, and it says free hot soup. And she had a big pot of soup and just a table out there with bowl, like styrofoam bowls that they could take their soup. And she just had it out there with no questions asked. She wasn't out there talking with anybody, not asking for donations. But she put a pot of soup out there every day for anyone who was hungry. And that really touched me. I drove by it every day, and I got to where I looked for it to see if she was, if she had it out there.
We need that fellowship. We need that community. And I grew up with a grandmother who treated illnesses with herbs and things like that. And so I know a lot about that kind of stuff. But not only that, I know people from around the world who want to contribute, who know this kind of stuff and want to contribute to the food program. Because, we don't have to have a lot of pharmaceuticals. We can eat good food and be healthy, and be kind and loving to each other and be happy. That's the most to laugh and be happy. I mean, you know, I mean, when have you not had a really good bowl of soup and a big thing of cornbread and somebody who cared about you and you weren't happy?
Oh, absolutely. I
you
made
know,
a pot of potato chip the other day and
you know,
I just felt
we need
warm
to do
all
that.
Over.
You, we
that's
need
right.
to, there's a woman here in town who has this enormous herbal garden, and you know all the kinds of things that we draw from there, you know, in order to help arthritis and rheumatism and whatever else it is, we can help that, and we don't have to do a bunch of pharmaceuticals, you know. And you know, if you're embraced by a lot of love, you don't have to be sick. You're confirmed.
There you go. And you're listening to Brian, the Campbell Soup Man, and the
oh,
next person.
Brian!
Okay.
We're going to whip him.
And the problem about going first with the question is that you have to stay on the line for such a long time, and I feel so bad. I love Toy Moore so much, and she's been so patient. She was the first one to ask the question. She's also married to one of the greatest musicians around who happens to be in Earth, Wind, and Fire. She's also a publicist herself, the Black Chamber of Commerce. She's a woman, and she takes no nonsense. Toy, do you have a last exit question for Dr. My Haley?
I do, Dr. Haley. First, I'd like to comment and say I love your energy, your spirit, your drive, and your inspiration to us writers. It was great, and it's the words I'll hold on to forever. And anytime you want to see Earth, Wind, and Fire, let us know, and we'll make sure.
Oh, I love it. You know, I grew up in college on Earth, Wind, and Fire. I mean, such pure energy. I mean, it's just wonderful. Earth, Wind, and Fire. You just you can't get any better. You really can't, because they exemplify that lifestyle and what it means to live that way. I mean, you can't get better models. You simply can't.
Yeah, I'm out on the road traveling with my husband right now. I've been out with him for about the last 4 days, and we've been to different hotels and dragging all over the place, and so he teases me and say, well, you want to live like a rock star, so now's your chance. So,
yeah, but you know what? Earth, Wind, and Fire taught us that if you have an ideal and a purpose, that you close ranks and you make it happen, and you make it happen in pure spirit, pure food, pure, you know. I mean, the Earth, Wind, and Fire did not take any prisoners when it came to doing the task. And I honor them and appreciate and respect what they have done for us and modeling what it is. I mean, it's one thing to talk it. Earth, Wind, and Fire put action behind it.
Yeah, they did, and they continue to do that. That's the thing I enjoy the most. My husband's been with them. He's a lead guitar for like 10 years. So,
oh, wow.
But my question to you is, you know, like Brian said, I've written 7 books, and I also do screenplays as well, and I would love, if having the opportunity to work with you, I would love to have the opportunity to be able to do that, because you're just so inspiring, and I just love, like I say, your energy and your spirit, and to be able to connect with someone of your caliber and just learn so much from you, I would be honored. So if you ever think about it or have a need for a research person or a person to just shadow you, please keep me in mind. I'd love to have the opportunity.
Well, you know, let me just say this. The universe doesn't make any mistakes, and there are no accidents in the process. If we were not supposed to be talking and sharing spirit, it would not happen. So I want you to please contact my business manager, and don't leave it in wishing and hoping. It doesn't go anywhere. Those are seeds that don't grow. Make it happen. Contact me, and let's just simply take our women energy and make it happen.
I like that, and I will do that exactly. Thank you very much for the opportunity and, again, the inspiration that you've put on all of us.
Thank you for the joy you have given me.
Oh, thank you.
There's a theme here. Everybody loves working with you and honored to be with you. I don't hear anything about me.
And I thank you, Brian.
Yes,
thank you.
course.
All right.
I made it all possible.
We're going to hang him by his fingernails. Oh. He's such a bad boy.
For what? I love working with you, Brian. It's been... Okay, fine.
We never know because of you, Brian.
We love you, Brian. You're
I love you guys.
Conduit, you know? You're a conduit on life's highway. You really are. You're
and when
marvelous.
I look that up, I'm going to hold that too.
We celebrate you.
Thank you. I want to introduce a great actor again. You have seen him in every movie, including The Devil and Miss Jones, Mr. Chris Berry.
Oh my God, Brian. Well, it's the risk of sounding repetitive. I once again, Dr. Haley, I just wanted to say what an honor it was to speak with you today. You've really opened my mind, and you've taught me a lot just in this brief time.
Thank you so much.
You're definitely welcome. This is basically just comes. This question comes from an actor's point of view. I just wonder if you ever translated the story of Mary Levestre to the screen. Do you have any actors in mind that's out there today that you might think that could really play the role?
I would love it if you would step in and help guide me in that, because I mean it's one thing to write the piece and you know you sort of sit around with this laundry list of hopes of who might play this part and that part and whatnot. But someone, you know, who actually has experience like you do could be a marvelous guide, you know, in making this happen and, you know, the whole series of six that comes across to present day. I think it would be a marvelous pattern, you know, to lay down, you know.
Well, thank you. I have a couple of people that just sort of popped into my head. One of them is an actress that also appeared in 12 Years a Slave, and she's gaining amazing critical acclaim right now. Her name is Lupita Nyong'o, straight out of Yale, but in her first real big film gig, and it she's just blowing the doors off of it. And another actress that I think you should consider, just you know, and put in there, is a friend of the show, a friend of Brian's, Radon Chong. Fantastic!
Oh, I love
fantastic.
Her! Oh my gosh! Yeah. Oh yeah! Oh definitely!
I had the good fortune to talk to her on Brian's show a while back, and she's just a fantastic, phenomenal human being and a very talented actress. So, just
how
plug,
can we make
plug,
this happen?
A little plug her.
How,
I can put everybody
well,
together.
I would have to speak with her.
Oh, come on, Brian. You wish.
All right, fine.
Also, and I would like to go ahead and just, like, make one more suggestion. I personally think I would make a fantastic Secretary of the Navy, Gideon Wells. So.
Oh, Chris, how can we make this happen? I think, you know,
well,
I mean, it's
first,
one thing to talk about.
I've got a screenplay for you, darling.
Well,
okay,
I'll tell you
okay.
what. Here's how you
okay.
can make it happen. One person can
okay.
make it happen. That's Kelly
Absolutely.
Corbin. She can,
Absolutely.
She can make it happen.
You know, we have to take it out of verbiage and put it into
yes.
action, because if we don't, nothing will ever happen. And we've got, you know, I must have at last count, I had 47 projects waiting to be produced. So please help me. Step in and let's make this happen.
Okay.
I have projects that Alex and
step one.
I have projects that Alex and I completed together that I don't know what to do with. I have projects that I have written on my own, and I don't know what to do with. And I'm simply waiting on the universe, you know, to direct me, and maybe that is what has happened today.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, let me introduce yourself. I introduce myself as Mr. Universe.
There you go.
God does not play.
Don't play back with
God
him either.
Does not
I mean,
play.
You follow what's been put out there, and you make a decision. And
Yep.
Well,
and let me tell
true.
You something. Let me tell you Uh-oh. Something about the feminine.
Oh, you're
energy.
A little irate. So, are you mad
let
at me? Is our marriage in trouble? I need a counselor. Where's Pastor Vision Jones?
Let me tell you something about the feminine energy. What now?
Uh-oh.
Once that.
Oh,
power
I know
happens,
women.
Oh, hey.
I can write a book.
Hey.
Okay.
You know.
Fine, it's a short book. Give me a title.
I tell you, the feminine energy not only knows about the power, the timing, the patience, the weight, and the warrior spirit that needs to go into it. Are we all knowledgeable about that? Hello?
About
the
women?
Panel.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
All
I
of
agree.
Us.
I was raised with four
all
sisters,
of
ma'am, so I agree with you.
Well,
I mean,
I think the most creative way that a woman
on
can
this
really
phone
get it.
Right now, Robbie has a talent agency. You know, we have access to all sorts of talents. I've been working with Sony and different production companies for over, gosh, I don't know, a decade, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like we've got the connections right here on this phone between.
And you know what? The universe has been working with you in your antecedents to take you to a threshold to ask you the question, what do you want to do?
Oh, I know.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah,
and now,
totally
do and we're going to go to another man who's very patiently holding, who's in the exodus of despair, and he's going to see a lot of prosperity, Mr. Paul Hunter. Paul, you have your extra question for Mr. Miss Dr. Haley.
Dr. Haley, I will just have one question for you, and that question is, since I come from a huge family of 21 siblings, there are 6 to 7 siblings that do not communicate with me because I had graduated from college. How can I reach out to them and try to better the relationship?
Don't do it. Just go your way. Take this image in your mind. Your antecedent, however you see her, she is wearing stalwart shoes, however you see that they need to be. She is wearing shin plates of the warrior, and they are like, oh, they're a mixture of blue and copper and gold, and they're like leather and a little bit of metal mixed in, but it's whatever is appropriate. Come on up to her waist, and she's wearing whatever is needed around the girth of her, the absolute, the sturdiness.
Are we
of
still
her.
Talking? This Dr. Haley, this is a family show.
This is amazingly family.
Okay.
She is wearing a breastplate.
Uh-oh, here
warrior.
We go.
The breastplate is a mixture of metals that whatever is necessary as she prepares for the battles of life.
It's still
and
working
it
for
covers,
me.
It covers the heart energy of her because her heart energy is so enormous that it makes her vulnerable in the world. So the breastplate not only needs to cover her because of what she needs to do in life, but because of who she is in life. On her head is the golden coil of the energy source that is the wisdom of the universe. And it covers her third eye, and it gives her additional energy for sight and wisdom in the world. She is your antecedent. Now take her and put her on the highest knoll, and it doesn't matter whether the sun comes down at 150 degrees. It doesn't matter what the winds are. It doesn't matter if it's a thunderstorm. It just doesn't matter, because why? She's going to stand. She stands.
Wow.
She's prepared for battle, but because of the way she is ready for battle, she probably will never have to use that energy for anything other than what you need her for, and that's
love
and direction.
That sounds like my honeymoon.
This is the antecedent for all of us, Brian.
Oh, okay,
this
I'm sorry.
This is all of the antecedent.
You read very well.
You know,
Brian's
and the thing about it is, The universe didn't ask her to think about anything. The universe didn't ask her to worry about anything. The universe didn't ask her to plan anything. All the universe asked her was to stand. And sometimes that can be the hardest thing of all. But if you stand, it will test your mettle, and it will enhance who you are and what you have come here to do and what you have come here to deliver. You don't have to go seek anybody, whether it's a relative or anybody else. Just stand. The universe will deliver whatever it is that you need.
Wow. Wow.
Thank you for those encouraging words.
That you know what I'm going to do, Paul? Whatever you feel that the world is closing in on you, I'm going to take what Dr. Haley just said. I'm going to send that to you. And you need to play that when you're alone and just remember what she said, because that is very uplifting and motivating. I mean, I'm motivated. How about you, Paul?
Yes, I am.
All
yeah,
right.
It was an encouraging word.
Yeah, very much. So thank you, Dr. Haley,
Paul,
for those words.
Paul.
Yes.
And all of the panel, imagine that I have taken my index finger and my middle finger, and I have kissed it, and I have placed it in the middle portion of your forehead, and I am blessing you. And what I'm saying to you is this: trust in the Lord, whatever you consider the Lord, with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, honor it. Honor this process. And it will give you the desires of your heart, as will I.
There you go, Paul. I mean, those were really deep words. How do you feel, buddy? What do you think, huh?
You know what? She said some words that was encouraging to me. And, you know, I am going to trust in the Lord 110%. It's everything is in God's hand.
It is.
Paul, you're a very talented man. And you have so much strength in you. And I know sometimes you feel alone, and sometimes that's where you get your strength. But to have someone with this whole panel and Dr. Haley with her very kind words, motivating and the spiritual words, it feels different, doesn't it? I mean, she touches you. She touches your heart.
Yes, he does. Because
oh, really does.
Yeah, because, you know, I was trying to personally myself do it by myself. You know, I can do this. I have the ability. I have the skill. But, you know, like she indicated, trust in the Lord, and that's what I have to do.
That's right.
And, Paul, you know what? You don't even have to think about it. You don't even have to think about me. But I am a part of your soft tissue now. And so whether you acknowledge me or not, just know that I'm in your background, uplifting who you are and what you are trying to do. It is not a mystery. And I know that. And I will be working for you, because everything that I am and every aspect of metaphysics that I know is now a part of you as well.
Wow. Thank you.
There you go. And Mr. Pastor Jones. You know,
oh,
Dr.
Pastor. Oh, bless
you. I'll tell you about Pastor Jones. I don't usually talk to people, but Pastor Jones, if he ever calls me, I pick up that phone right away. And when I'm done talking to him and he talks to me, and I can do anything. I mean, I know I can do anything. I can do anything, but I'll get hurt. But knowing Pastor Jones there, I don't get hurt when I think about I could do anything, because there's some kind of spirit angel on my shoulder. And I really do mean this, Kurt. I really do. I do feel him when he talks to me. So, Pastor Vision Jones, your exit question, please.
Thank you so much. First, allow me to thank you, Ryan, for this marvelous opportunity that you've allowed us to come together and fellowship with one another.
Thank you, sir.
You're absolutely welcome. And I just, I'm going to have to leave in just a moment here, but I want to ask
sure.
I also would like to pay a tribute
to Dr. Hill, if you don't mind. I'd like to share something with her as well before I go. But I just want to thank you, because everyone that's on the line, all the panelists, so authentic and so true and so honest in sharing and expressing that I almost feel that I had church. It's a wonderful thing. And just to fly on the wall. So I'm going to ask a favor of you, Brian, and of Dr. Haley. Somehow connect us either on Facebook or whatever it may be, because I'd just like to be a fly on the wall to see what is coming down the pipeline, because this did not happen by accident.
Pastor, it did not. And you cannot recede. You cannot, because you are what my grandmother would call point of the plow. You don't take the sideline at all. You are point of the plow. And I would ask you to do two things, if you would, please.
Sure.
One is I want you to go out your front door.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to take 7 steps.
Mm-hmm.
On the 7th step, I would like for you to scoop up the earth under your feet on the 7th step. And please send that to me as our personal connection in this amazing metaphysical journey and aspect of things that are greater than even we know at this point. Please send that to me. It is very, very important. It is a spiritual deed that you need to do for all of us on the panel.
Okay.
Because you are so important. The other thing I would ask you is, would you please give us your word in a prayer, a short prayer, and bless us in this work?
Absolutely, and I'm going to do that right after I share my tribute with you. But I'm so sure that we're connected in that way, because as you are connecting and talking about the food and things that I've listened to and everyone coming in together with, I thought about how connected I am with the universe in that same way, because I actually experiment with solar power myself. I built, I have about an acre, so I built a pond, a koi, and, you know, I have chickens, and I'm just love the earth and nature, and I could completely stand being connected. But this organic conversation that we've been having, this sharing of our souls that we've been having here is about to have a cataclysmic synergism that I see coming forth, because this, as I said, is no accident. So I'm going to give you the tribute, and then I will close with prayer because I have to leave over here.
Pastor, what you have just said is confirmation of what we all know in our soft tissue and in our hearts to be true. So I would just ask you if you would please bless us with your word.
Absolutely. My tribute to you is something I've written some time ago, and it's basically, as I hear you speaking, I just could not let you leave without sharing with you. It's entitled The Black Woman. Proud, a tower of strength. Fragile as a flower, yet tough as cement. Her heart and her love she'll pour out to you, and there isn't anything that she will not do. Pulls her to make something almost from nothing. More ways than I could ever express. And to the older women, I'll say this one thing. Our younger, no matter the situation that you'll endure, for the black woman should really listen to them, I pray. Don't forget your history and let it fade away. Chasing material things, however nice they are, isn't what enabled us to make it this far. Everything in life, be all you can be. Don't give a man the opportunity to call you easy. No matter how beautiful it is that you may be, show that you'll be valued for more than just your money. And even at times when you feel to give up, that is the goal of the enemy, to destroy and to disrupt. But as you've done in the past for so long, keep up the fight, for you'll overcome. Time is going by so swiftly for us, it seems that we're trying to get everything in a rush. But if you start to carry on the torch of our race, be the best you can be. Just slow down the pace. For if not, you'll fly by and the world will not know who we are and where we'd like to go. You are the backbone of the black society, and who doesn't know that one day they will see that the black man's a car, but the women are the gas, and one without the other can never, ever last. Black woman is our voice that speaks out quite loud. And when you hear the music, you can't help but be proud. I'd like
Pastor,
to thank you.
When I get that from Brian, I am going to make sure that I have that enlarged and framed in a prominent place in my office so that everybody can see that. It was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Let us pray. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that. Heavenly Father, we thank you. We thank you for your grace. We thank you for your mercy. We thank you, Lord, for allowing us the opportunity to come together and to fellowship and to get something of the richness of your wisdom sown into our spirits, into our hearts. We ask now that whatsoever we have taken away, that you cover it, Lord, that we will continue to move with all speed, Father, to keep the connection that we have and to not allow it to disappear and dissipate from us, to keep our dreams, our focus alive, to continue to be positive and to make this day memorable as a new beginning, for where we're going from here is on a higher vibration, on a higher level. We thank you for allowing us to share with Dr. Haley and for what she has allowed us to hear and to receive. Bless her now. Bless each and every person on this panel. Bless the show. Bless Brian. Bless those who have allowed the work to happen behind the scenes. Thank you, Lord. We bless this now in Jesus' holy name. We say ashe and amen.
Ashe and amen.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Pastor.
Talk with you all soon.
All right. You take care of yourself, Pastor. Thank
Brian,
you so much.
That connection between Dr. Haley and I, you can connect me however you see fit.
I sure will.
Oh.
I sure will.
Pastor, we have to follow up with this connection. We have to.
Absolutely. Thank you. God bless you now.
Thank you, sir. God bless you. Oh, Pastor, how are you feeling before you go? How are you feeling?
I am doing very well. I am actually, Brian is alluding to my near-fatal accident. I was riding on a motorcycle. I ride motorcycles, and a lady cut in front of me. She was lost, didn't know where she was going. She cut in front of me, so I fell off the bike, and the bike, which was about 700 pounds, hit me in my chest, and I suffered a laceration to my liver and multiple bones in my The Lord preserved me. And I tell you, it's a miracle because everyone has been saying we have never seen anyone suffer an accident on a motorcycle come to the ER conscious and talking. So, Lord protect us.
Pastor, that was the universe redirecting your path.
Absolutely.
You were going in a direction the universe wanted to change. And it just seemed to have to deal with a dramatic way. And so that has happened now. And you are off in a whole other direction, whether you're conscious of it or not. But that was the universe speaking in your life.
Amen. And I thank you so much for asking. I am 15 degrees range of motion away from being normal. And I first started at 100, probably 110 degrees away from being normal.
Is the universe, you know, it's like you were never far from a new normal because the universe was redirecting your energy and your path. That had to happen. Because you were being a little bit resistant, and the universe simply just redirected you in a very dramatic way. That's all that was. You know, I mean, it wasn't trying to take you out or anything like that. The universe needed to get your attention and take you in a whole other direction. That's all that happened.
I agree. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
Kelly. Thank you, Diane, and all the staff. Thank
you're
you so
very
much.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
It was a pleasure, Pastor.
All right, bye-bye.
It was a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Vision Jones, here's how we're going to do it. Usually we say goodbye and we go this, but we're going to, in honor of Dr. Haley, here's how we're going to exit. We're going to play a little game called Roots. I like to call it Chicken George and Waffles. Anyway, if you miss, I love you, Dr. Haley. If
so
you miss
bad.
A question, I know. If you miss a question, you have to exit the studio. I will pick who goes against who. And in honor of Dr. Haley, are everybody ready to play?
Don't pick me first because I don't want to leave first.
Okay. I'm going to choose the first one up is the great actor, Chris Berry. Chris Berry is going against Paul Hunter.
Okay, I'm ready for him.
Okay, whoever loses has the studio. Are you ready to play Chicken George and Waffles? Okay, here we are. This is a trivia question on Roots. How well you know Roots? It will be a multiple answer kind of question. And here we go. This is Roots, Part 3, Chicken George and Tom. Ready for the question. Now, I'm going to ask you the question. If both of you agree on the answer, I will ask you another question.
Okay.
But if both of you agree on the answer and you're right, I'll ask you another question. But both of you agree on the answer and you're wrong, both of you guys have to get the hell out. I mean, I'm sorry.
Okay.
You have to leave. Ready for your question. And here it goes.
Yeah.
It's time to play Chicken George and Waffles. Hey, I got to put that on again. Get that for Christmas. It'll be on my, I'll be the one who's making that game board. All right, it's loading. Here we go. First question. Here we go. Paul against Chris. Roots. Here we go. We're going to start it. You have about 5 seconds to answer. Here we go. In what year was Chicken George born? Was it 1803, 1809, 1806, 1812? Chris, what is your answer?
Give me the choices again, right quick.
Sure. And what year was Chicken George born? 1803, 1809, 1806, 1812?
I'm going to say 1812.
You say, this is Diane. Kelly, you can remember the answer. What's your answer again?
1809.
Wait. Okay, his answer was 1809. Hey, and how about you, Mr. Paul Hunter? Do you agree with that answer, or do you want to pick another answer?
I
disagree.
I said 1812, but I could be wrong.
I disagree. It's 1806.
Okay.
Wow. Chris, the answer is, in the winter of 1806, Chicken George was born.
Okay, well, I guess I'm headed out now.
Chris, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Berry, the fabulous actor.
Well,
always Brad Pitt. Chris, what is your latest film again? Please tell us what it is.
It's 12 Years a Slave, directed by Steve McQueen. It is just now premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival. It will be opening in theaters on October the 18th.
Brian?
Thank you. Yes.
Brian?
Yes.
Chris Berry will be on tomorrow to promote 12 Days a Slave, as a matter of fact.
I can't wait, Mr. Chris. I can't wait. Here's the lineup we have for
Chris,
the week.
Chris, would you please be in touch with me? Chris?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled. I can tell you, today's show really, it hit me right where it's supposed to, right in the center of my being. And I will definitely stay in touch with you, ma'am. Definitely.
Thank you. I'm grateful.
Thank you. And I also like to say thanks for introducing me to Paul and to Dr. Cottle and Pastor Jones. Brian, I really appreciate it. And Diane and Kelly, you guys have a good one. And once again, Dr. Haley, it was a real pleasure. God bless you, ma'am.
Thank you.
My pleasure,
Chris.
You're a great friend and a very talented actor. It's a pleasure always
thanks,
having
guys.
You on, Chris. Ladies and gentlemen, the great Chris Berry. He'll be on tomorrow as our special guest, and he'll talk about his film. And later on down the week, we're hoping to get Miranda, who is a military. She's also a production. Works in production. She has her own production company. But you did not know that she was in the military for, I think, 12, 13 years, Carrie?
Yes.
And she's a soldier. And she's going to really tell us stories about what happened to her. She was raped while she was in the military, and what went through with her and her life and everything. It's really horrific. She's going to be on Saluting Military Women of our Armed Forces. All right. Okay, so, Paul, you survived. Now we're going to give you a break. We're going to match Dr. Mel Cuddle. Are you still here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Dr. Mel, you're going against Tori Moore. Tori, are you still here?
Okay.
I mean, Toy.
I'm here.
Okay, you two are up. Here we go. It's time to play Roots, Kicking Georgian Waffles. And here we go. In honor of Dr. Haley, here's your question. When George was a little boy, he used to do imitations of people. I'm going to read again. When George was a little boy, he used to do imitations of people. Yes or no? Dr. Mel, Melissa Cottle. Yes or no?
I would say no.
You would say no. And you? Wait a minute.
I would say yes.
Mel's going against who again? I'm sorry. I'm off the board.
Toy.
Toy. I'm sorry. Toy. It's Toy. Please forgive me. Toy, I'll ask you the same question.
Yeah, I would say yes.
When George was little, he used to have fun imitating people. Oops. I think I messed up the answer. Next question.
Face all right.
Nobody said the game was flawless. Okay, here we go. Same question to both of you. What did Massa Leah give Chicken George a traveling pass for? What did Massa Leah give Chicken George a traveling pass for? Was it to go to the chicken fights with him? Was it to go see his grandfather, Kunta? Or was it to go tomcatting at night? Or was it to go to work in the fields? What did Massa George give... I'm sorry, Massa Leah give George a traveling pass to do.
Okay. I think he gave him a pass to go to one of the cockfights.
One of the cockfights. Toy, do you agree with that, or do you have an answer?
I would think to go see his grandfather.
Ah, that would be a good one, but it could be wrong, which it is. The answer is Massa Leah gave George a traveling pass to go tomcatting at night.
Oh.
The main reason for this pass was Massa Leah found out that George was sneaking over to Massa Jewett's place to see a slave girl named, is it Charity?
Miss Hilda.
Oh, no, it says Charity here.
It was followed by Matilda, who he married.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I'd have to argue with Dr. Haley here now.
No.
I don't know. I mean, this is a lady
we have to do the sex aspect of this, you know, because this is life in process.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
I'm just
lost
Dr.
the word.
Haley is on my team. He's blowing you away,
well,
Brian.
since you got the answer wrong, both of you.
Okay.
I want to say goodbye to Dr. Melissa Cottle. We still got Robbie there. And ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Melissa Cottle, publisher, writer, director, producer, business owner, PhD, educator, marvelous lady. And good to her children.
And my new friend.
Thanks so much, baby.
That's right.
And her agency called Lacanola. Yes.
And I've already sent you an email, Dr. Haley, and I've already ordered your book, and I'm starting to convert. I want to show you the first chapter of the conversion part to the screenplay.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
Already
you
done.
Know,
it.
We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do.
That's where my heart is.
And mine too.
It's really crazy that, you know, when I was literally 12 years old, I gained an interest about the Civil War and then studied almost everything I could on it and how this impacts me now. I mean, that's
but
just,
you know what? You know what? What happened to you was, that's tangential. What happened
yeah.
to you was your aspect in centering in your feminine power. And that's what you're experiencing now. All this
yeah.
other stuff is, I mean, it's colorful, it's interesting, and it's fun, but you are the one who is now manifesting.
Yes.
And that's what the
fun is. And because
is.
Of that, you're right, it's making me the woman who I am today.
Yeah, exactly.
That you will
you
succeed
know.
At all odds, against all odds,
exactly.
when they're all against you. Yes.
Exactly, and it's like it doesn't matter what, whether it's the sun, the thunderstorm, the what, you stand. That's who you are, and the universe is directing your path.
I agree.
And I have, and you guys are so terrific.
What an honor and a pleasure. So we'll talk soon.
Okay.
I just got informed that we're on podcast, so they're going to end us pretty soon. I just want to say, Dr. Mel, it's always a pleasure and inspiration and an honor to have you and all of our guests today. The book is called The Treason of Mary Levester. Go to Amazon.com. Go to, you also said you have it in Barnes & Noble. Am I correct, Dr. Haley?
It's at Barnes & Noble nationwide.
And
it's real easy. All I did was typed in Dr. Mai Haley on Amazon and took me straight to be able to purchase it.
There you
yeah.
go.
Mm-hmm.
It's real
and,
easy.
And before we
you know,
leave,
I just,
again,
I just,
Blog Talk
I just,
will sometimes cut us off very rudely, so I just
okay.
want to mention Toy Moore. Oh, I know. Go ahead, Mel.
I just wanted to mention one thing, Brian. I just got back from the second leg of my major book tour, and, I mean, it was absolutely amazing. It was all up and down the East Coast, and there were just some marvelous people that you should know, and all of our panel should be connected to, because we're all a fellowship now, and you know, and we need to make that happen. We need to make this continue to work.
I feel good because I finally belong to a group who didn't reject me.
Oh,
Brian, if you don't
shut
up.
I know some of you guys are on the fence.
Brian.
I'm coming over there, Brian.
We love you, Brian.
I know.
We
Ms.
love
Toy,
you.
I love you, too. Ms. Toy Moore, you are wonderful, as always. Chamber of Commerce, the Black Chamber of Commerce, professional, author, writer. The person who really holds Earth, Wind, and Fire together so they can tour. Thank you so much.
Oh, bless you. Bless you. Absolutely. I love what you do and who you are.
Oh,
well,
thank
you.
You.
I love what you do.
You.
Oh, you're talking to Dr. Haley again. Thank you.
we're going to kill him. We're
I know
bring
it.
Him up by his ankle.
I want to also give a special thanks to you, Brian, for allowing me to come. And Carrie and Kelly, thank you, ladies, for inviting me to come apart. This is history for me, so I'm grateful. And thank you for letting me be a part of it all.
Oh,
well,
so happy to talk to you, Toy.
It's such an honor with you, Toy. And I met Toy, interviewed with her, marvelous lady. Thanks to Carrie Brooks, who is a producer, works with MVP On Demand 2, who have introduced me to Toy. I'm grateful to that. Paul Hunter, I'm going to have to say goodbye because they're going to cut us off. I hope today that was positive for you, sir.
Yes, it was, and thank you for having me on the show. And I want to appreciate Dr. Haley for her words of encouragement.
Hunter,
well, thank you,
your heart and my heart beat as one in the matrix. You know, you can't lose me anymore.
Okay.
I'm with you.
All right. So if anybody want to email me, please go to my website, which is www.nolovenocharity.com. Nolovenocharity.com. Also, you can Facebook me at author Paul Lamar Hunter. No, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, okay.
So you
and
can
the name
Facebook
of your book,
me.
Sir? And your
it's
name
No
of your
Love,
book?
No Charity, The Success Story of the 19th Child. No Love, No Charity, The Success Story of the 19th Child. You can get it at any bookstore, or you can order it on Barnes & Noble's
Thank
website.
You, sir.
And also Amazon.com.
Give our love to the pastor. Tell him we missed him.
Okay. Okay.
And again, your Facebook page. I'm sorry if I stepped on you. Okay. And sorry, I guess Mr. Hunter left. And again, Carrie Brooks, who didn't really have much to say today. I didn't get to her. Carrie Brooks is a producer. Carrie, I know you have a lot to say to Dr. Haley. Please comment.
I just want to thank you. It was awesome. I am looking forward to actually seeing some of your stuff come to fruition. I'm a producer, so, you know, if you ever need anybody or want somebody to talk to about that, all you have to do is contact Seabrook Media, LLC.
Oh, I thank you so much. And, you know, when you speak with my business manager, Arsenia Walker, we have some examples of my speeches as I've gone across country and what I teach in terms of metaphysics and, you know, and making it happen, you know. I would love to share it with you, whether you use it or not. I would just love to share it, and, you know, so that it's just a conduit between you and me.
You do metaphysics, too?
Of course.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Of course. Oh, definitely.
I've
been
really
teaching.
Love to talk to you about that.
This entire time that we have been together today, I've been teaching metaphysics.
And I've been a student.
And I have been blessing you and where you stand and what you're doing and where you are going from here. You know, so it's all a part of it, you know, and it's a force that is a part of who we are. And so I just love the fact that you have allowed me to share that and to enjoy that with you and to bless you, you know, which I have been doing behind the scenes with you.
Well,
thank you
so much. And, this is a conversation I definitely would love to continue.
Definitely.
We'd love to have you back on, Dr. Haley, anytime that you're available and have some time. Thank you so much.
I would love it. And, you know, anytime I can teach metaphysics and, you know, what it means to be who you are in the universe and to manifest who you are in fulfillment, that's what I love to do, as well as my food program.
I love it. And we also have Diane Mears-Dillon. She dropped, meaning she cannot get back in because we're now on podcast. She has a message for you. Kelly, would you like to relay the message to Dr. Haley?
Oh, she just said to please tell Dr. Haley that she really enjoyed listening to her and that she found her to be very inspirational.
Well, and tell her that, you know, she doesn't even have to look over her left shoulder. Her blessing stands alone.
Oh, I sure will.
You are wonderful.
You.
And I'm going to leave the last word to Robbie. And Robbie, would you like to say your last exit to Dr. Haley?
Yes, I am. I still have goosebumps, and I feel so connected to you. And
oh, you talk to me all the time. Come on, please, you fire me. All right.
You know, it's amazing. It's amazing how you can be connected from, I don't know where you are. I'm in L.A. today, but I feel like you're right here. I really do.
There, you know, in terms of time and space, there is no distance, there is no space. So, you know, we are definitely connected right now. It's immediate.
Yes. Yes.
And before Blog Talk Ruby cuts us all off, from the bottom of my heart, Dr. Haley, my Haley, author, speaker. speaker, inspirational speaker, spiritual guidance counselor. I want to say thank you so much for your time. I know you're a very busy lady. I want to thank you so much for your thoughts and sharing some of the private moments of you and your time with Dr. Alex Haley. And you have a great sense of humor. I really enjoyed this very much. You are a very wonderful person. And I want to thank you again for coming in, sharing your time with all of us.
Thank you. You're my little brother, you know, who's just as mischievous as he can be. And I thank you for that because you're so much.